Good morning. Welcome to the April 15th San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors meeting. Please stand and join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, would you read the changes to the agenda, please?
You have one change to today's agenda. It's regarding consent agenda item 8A8, request from Planning and Building to waive the policy regarding change order limits for the California Code check purchase order to allow for General Services to issue an additional change order for plan review charges for the Vintage Terrage Complex. Staff is recommending the cover sheet be amended to change order limits to read charge order limits. All requirements of the Brown Act have been met as this item was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement, and that's all your changes today.
Thank you. With that, we'll move on to the consent agenda, and I have one request to speak on consent. That would be Mr. Eric Greening.
Good morning. I am Eric Greening. Last night, I'm addressing the health agency items, particularly 1 and 2. Last night, the Health Commission met, and they, with Jeff Hamm, went over essentially the CAO's target for their budget and sort of the prioritization in-house that they had been working on for how they were going to handle the inadequate resources that were likely to be coming their way and do the least damage. And it appears that they had worked out, if Sacramento doesn't drop a big shoe on the whole process, they had worked out a way that most of the deleted positions would in fact be vacant positions, with the exception of positions that the clinics would have to vacate relative to their contract and the lesser amount they would get. In any event, I just wanted to be sure relative to A1 and A2 that we're not creating positions that would have living people in them who would then find themselves back out on the street after the what looks like it's going to be a rather unpleasant budget goes through. And I guess the same question could even be asked relative to A4, where contracts are being made with psychiatrists. Presumably the county expects to be able to follow through whatever the budget circumstances are and continue to be able to afford those contracts. But I would appreciate just a few words of elucidation on that, including the worst case scenario that the budget has to be revisited after the state budget passes and there are unpleasant surprises or non-surprises in that. Just want to be sure you're not creating positions that will then have to go away again. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. That is my last request to speak on items on the consent agenda, so I'll bring it back to my colleagues on the board and see if there are any issues they would like to pull.
David H. has light on.
Right, I think he wants to respond to Eric, which we'll do when we get there. Supervisor Gibson?
None, sir.
Supervisor Sajian? Supervisor
Wilson? No, sir.
Okay. Mr. Edge, would you care to respond to Mr. Green's comment?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Eric essentially had his supposition is right. These two items don't create anything that is on any kind of reduction list. They're separate items, and we wouldn't be bringing such items as these to you if they were targeted for reduction in any way. So I think that takes care of his first question. Second question, worst case scenario, will we have to revisit the county budget after June if the state does something particularly significant? The answer, of course, is yes, potentially. largely depends on what Sacramento does, as your board's well aware. Folk in Sacramento are talking about wrestling with a significant deficit, perhaps as high as $20 billion, which is a hard number to really grasp in terms of we have to cut more money from the California state budget than probably 40 states have as a total budget. So it's a lot of money. And clearly, they will have to come up with some quite significant cuts in programs, which inevitably have impacts on county government. As you heard our lobbyists describe it, we tend to be the ATM machine for the state in these kind of circumstances. We've got a little bit of wiggle room in the budget. As you know, we had some additional sales tax coming in that we hadn't anticipated from the Diablo Canyon generator project. That sales tax basically provided something like a $3 million total turnaround in the figures we were estimating, so that meant we needed to cut less significantly than we'd anticipated. So that gives us a little bit of flexibility with the state budget, but the short answer is we simply don't know until Sacramento settles its thing, and I don't think anybody anticipates that they will settle their budget early this summer. It may well be something that continues to be wrangled over through August, September, but until we get it, we just don't know whether you guys will need to come back into discussion concerning the budget you'd adopted in June. Okay. Sorry about that.
With that, I move we approve the consent agenda item.
Second.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded that we approve the consent agenda.
As amended.
As amended. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
I move to approve the presentation items.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded that we approve the presentation calendar. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Let's see. We'll have the first presentation proclaiming April as Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Supervisor Shajian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may invite Jennifer Adams to the lectern, please. Gives me a great pleasure. And by the way, you look very good running the car wash this Saturday. I'm sure you attracted additional customers and raised pretty enough money.
That wasn't ever in my job description.
But you look good, and you should tell us ahead of time so we give a little extra publicity here.
Thanks.
With that, if I may, this resolution proclaiming April 2008 as Sexual Assault Awareness Month and April 26th as Walk a Mile in Her Shoes Day in San Luis Obispo County. Just reading it makes my feet hurt. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas sexual violence is a devastating and intolerable crime affecting men, women, and children of all races, ages, cultures, economic situations, and abilities. And whereas sexual violence is a major social problem in homes, schools, and communities across the San Luis Obispo County, resulting in countless physical, mental, and other health consequences. And whereas crisis intervention services were provided to 330 survivors of sexual violence in San Luis Obispo County by the Sexual Assault Recovery and Prevention Center last year. And whereas the Sexual Assault Recovery and Prevention Center and the County of San Luis Obispo, in conjunction with other organizations nationwide, designates the month of April as an additional opportunity to promote awareness and prevention of sexual violence. And whereas the Sexual Assault Recovery and Prevention Center of San Luis Obispo County is committed to eliminating sexual violence through education and community action across the County of San Luis Obispo and promoting equality, safety, and respect among all individuals. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim April 2008 as Sexual Assault Awareness Month and April 26th as Walk a Mile in Her Shoes Day. We urge all citizens of San Luis Obispo County to join the march to stop rape and gender violence on April 26th and to help communicate the message that there is something everyone can do to stop sexual violence. If you come forward and accept this resolution, please.
Adams, if you would like to say a few words, you're welcome to do so.
Thank you. I am Jennifer Adams. I'm with the Sexual Assault Recovery and Prevention Center. Thank you very much to the Board of Supervisors for this proclamation. This month is about honoring survivors, whether they have told their story or not. It's about raising awareness and destroying myths that make it difficult for survivors and their significant others to talk about their experiences. It's about inviting everyone to join in the effort to end sexual violence. So we are inviting you to participate in our sixth annual Walk a Mile in Her Shoes event, which will take place on Saturday, April 26th at Mitchell Park. This is a men's march to stop rape, but we invite families, women, children to come out. It's actually a very fun event. Registration begins at 11 with the 1 mile walk through downtown at noon and a barbecue and live music to follow. We provide the high heels. We also have flip-flops, if you prefer. And yes, we do have the very large sizes. So we invite everyone to come out and add your voice to speak out against sexual assault. I would also like to take this opportunity to recognize some of my staff that are here today, if they would stand. They do so much every day with so little. They are amazing, their heart, their passion, their dedication. They inspire me every day as we do this work. So I just very much appreciate them. Thank you. Again, thank you to the Board of Supervisors, and we hope to see everyone out on the 26th at Mitchell Park.
Do you have registrations for April 26th?
I absolutely do. Would you like one?
Unless we're going to receive something in the mail. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to try to be there. Yeah. It's an Earth Day event the same day.
I will.
We can make a copy. Yeah. We'll make sure that we'll make a copy. One will be on his desk during the break.
Yeah, that's right. I'm sure. Yeah, we'll each give him one. Thank you, Ms. Adam.
Thank you very much.
Our next, who do we have? Oh, yeah. Supervisor Linthal, you wanted to make a comment. I'm sorry.
Thank you. I just wanted to thank Jennifer for the great work she does. And my shoes are getting a little wore out, so I'm going to need a new pair of those extra large if you can put those on reserve. Because I think Katya and I have done this 4 years in a row now. He's a tough man to keep up with in high heels. And I hope that doesn't get me in trouble.
As long as we don't walk holding hands, we're okay.
But we're looking forward to being there. And I just want to thank you again for all the great things that you do, Jennifer. You and your staff to be commended.
Okay. Thank you. Our next resolution is for the court-appointed child advocates. And Supervisor Gibson will read that resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My pleasure. If I could have Ms. Teresa Tardif, the Executive Director of Court-Appointed Special Advocates, or CASA, come to the microphone. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas the County of San Luis Obispo prides itself on giving back to the community, contributing to the quality of life among our citizens, and whereas CASA, Court-Appointed Special Advocates, in association with the National Court-Appointed Special Advocate Association, speaks for the best interests of the 500 abused and neglected children who are involved in the juvenile courts in San Luis Obispo County, and whereas, through a national effort, San Luis Obispo community members are encouraged to join to raise awareness for those children fallen victim to abuse and neglect throughout the month of April, and whereas this effort will give abused and neglected children in our community and around the country a chance for a safe and positive future, now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim April 2008 as CASA Child Advocate Month in San Luis Obispo County, and in doing so, urges all citizens to join in a national effort to raise awareness and help prevent child abuse and neglect.
I'm Teresa Tardif, Executive Director of CASA for Children of San Luis Obispo County. CASA refers to court-appointed special advocates. We appreciate the support the County of San Luis Obispo and the Board of Supervisors have provided us during CASA's 15 years serving children in every area of the county. This proclamation is a very important step in raising awareness regarding the needs of children in our county who are victims of abuse, neglect, or abandonment. The CASA program provides trained volunteers who advocate for the best interests of children. Our volunteers spend many hours with their CASA child as a friend and support person. They investigate all aspects of a child's situation, speaking with their teachers, social workers, friends and relatives, anyone who might provide insight into the child's unique situation and needs. CASA volunteers are the eyes and ears of the court and provide detailed information to the judge to help guide the decision-making process for the future of these children. CASA volunteers also advocate on a daily basis for the children's educational needs in the school system and connect them with appropriate services ranging from intervention for children who are born drug exposed to getting teenagers prepared to live independently. We are currently recruiting volunteers for our next 30-hour training session in May. Our goal is to provide a CASA volunteer for every child in the court system who has been abused, abandoned, or neglected. Thank you.
I would just point out, Ms. Chairman, that with Ms. Tardif today are a variety of a number of advocates who are active in the program. And knowing a bit about your work from my contacts in the DA's office, I want to add my thanks to all that you do for the children of this county.
Yes, and I have several friends that have served as volunteers with CASA, and I know what a huge commitment it is of the volunteers, and I want to thank them and all of you for the fine work you do. So thank you. Okay, we have another presentation to make, and Ms. Dori Duke from Human Resources is here. Take it away, Dori.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Dori Duke with Marcy Goodell from the Human Resources Department. We are pleased to assist your board in the tradition of recognizing employees for their years of public service. Individuals recognized are dedicated employees who serve as an example to others as they contribute on a daily basis to the county's vision of a safe, healthy, livable, prosperous, and well-governed community. The individual being recognized today is Mike Matus from the Sheriff's Office. If Mike could come up to the left, to the right podium, and Steve Bolts is here from the Sheriff's Office. Mike, once you get your award, you're welcome to make a brief statement and come up to the board so that they can offer their congratulations.
Good morning, Chairman Patterson, board members, and staff. I'm Steve Bolts, Undersheriff, and I know Mike is very pleased to be here this morning. He told me that yesterday. he's been awaiting this moment for a little over 25 years.
Yeah.
Mike Matus became the Administrative Services Manager for the Sheriff's Department in December 2005. Mike is responsible for managing the department's fiscal operation and supervises four staff members. Mike has been a dedicated county employee since 1982, working in accounting positions in alcohol services, auditor, and general services. His previous classifications range from accounting technician through accountant three. Mike's wife, Nancy, is a longtime employee of the auditor's office. Mike's knowledge of the county's various accounting methods and systems and his previous county experience has been invaluable in his transition to the greater responsibility and authority in managing the Sheriff's Department's budget. He has faced many difficult issues during his tenure with the Sheriff's Department, including an 80% turnover in his staff and the painful implementation of SAP. Grant management, drafting and editing of board letters, and inclusion of all necessary documents with board actions has been a new task and has certainly been challenging for him, but he has addressed it very well. We congratulate Mike on his first 25 years of county tenure and wish him many more successful and appropriately rewarding years in the future. Thank you, Mike.
Well, just a brief comment. I have served in four departments, but one thing that doesn't change, particularly in my business, is that debits and credits are always the same. Budgets and appropriations are always the same. And really, the biggest change that did happen was the switch from FMS to SAP. And but everything else pretty much stays the same, and it's been a challenge. But it was actually a good challenge. It brought some variety to things. Thank you.
That's right. We need you to come back, Mike. I'd like to get a picture if you turn around.
Maybe on the phone.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you,
Dory. And I guess, let's see. With that, we'll move on to item C1 on this morning's agenda.
You may want to do public comment.
Pardon?
Public comment? Public. You haven't done public comment.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. I haven't. Thank you. I'm just blasting right along here. Well, I don't know. What are we going to do about that? Public comment.
Matt's here for public comment. You want to step
yeah.
forward? Mr. Jensen, are you stepping forward for public comment?
We'll open the floor to public comment for items that are not on today's agenda, and I have no request to speak. Let's see.
That is for public comment.
Is this for public comment, Kenneth? Okay, well, I do have one after all. Kenna Burke.
Good morning. I'm Kenna Burke, the Executive Director of the Children's Health Initiative. I'd like to invite the board and the members of the community today to join the Board of Directors of the Children's Health Initiative as we celebrate our Champions for Children event at the Santa Margarita Ranch on Saturday, April 26th at 6 p.m. This year's champions that we're celebrating are absolutely fantastic. We have Rob Blackner with the Paso Robles School District, and he's a gentleman who has implemented the farm-to-school agricultural program there and also the Culinary Arts Academy. We have Dr. Botso Coroscelli that we're celebrating that started the Youth Symphony. Dr. DiVincenzo, as many of you know, who have championed children and their oral health for many, many years in the community. We also have Henry and Cece Lane as our champion in business, and we have Karen Trask, who originated here in San Luis Obispo as a pediatric nurse and began the pediatric program at French Hospital a long time ago. So these are our five champions that we'll be celebrating this year at the Santa Margarita Ranch. All proceeds from this event will be used to provide health insurance premiums for our local children here in San Luis Obispo County. Currently, the Children's Health Initiative provides about 600 children health insurance premiums, comprehensive medical, dental, and vision care. And then we have about 700 of these children on a waiting list right now. So I just wanted to let you know there'll be the Arroyo Grande Optimus providing the barbecue, and we'll have the Rockabilly Legends. We'll be providing the music in the background for the event. So just wanted to let you know what's happening in 2 weeks. So thank you very much.
And where is it, and what time is it, and when is it? One more time.
It's at 6 p.m., Saturday, April 26th, at the Santa Margarita Ranch. And if you want more information, you can contact us at 540 5177 with the Children's Health Initiative, or you can go online at slohealthykids.org, and you can get tickets there, and you can find out more information. And I have things for you, too.
Great.
All right.
Thank you.
And if it all fails, call my office.
That was Supervisor Sajian weighing in there.
Well, you're walking in the high heels. I'll be helping.
Are there any other individuals that would like to speak on items not on today's agenda? I have no more requests, so I will close public comment and bring it back to the board, where we now will proceed to item C1. And Madam Clerk, if you would introduce that item, please.
This is item C1. This is a hearing to consider a resolution from the Templeton Community Library Association to waive the permit processing fees in the First District. Recommendation is for approval. Instruct chairperson to sign.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Jansen, you're presenting for planning staff this morning,
sir.
I presume. Okay.
C1.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board, Matt Jansen, planning staff. Your first two items involve the Templeton Community Library Association and fees. The first one involves fees associated with permit processing, and the Library Association has requested a waiver of the remainder of the fees that the planning director was unable to waive. Under the adopted fee ordinance, the planning director is able to waive up to $5,000, and they're cumulative. So the previous minor use permit for this site, those fees were waived, and the existing and current construction permit for the site, all applicable fees were waived, and the planning director topped out at $5,000. So the remainder of the fees, $4,835.08, must be waived by your board. And that's our recommendation today, because the project meets several criteria in the adopted fee ordinance, and most importantly, that the project will result in a public benefit. So our recommendation to you is that you waive these fees associated with the permit process. Happy to answer any questions.
Okay, do we have any questions for Mr. Jansen? I see none here. I'll open it to the public, and I have no request to speak specifically on this item, so I'll close
it to the
public.
I assume they're pleased with it. There are representatives of Templeton here. So
I think
they're willing to speak.
I do have requests to speak on the road fees, but
yeah,
not on this.
I think they will speak on that.
Second?
Do you want me to? I'll make a motion then to accept staff's recommendation of waive fees.
And the second?
Second.
Take your pick. It's been moved and seconded that we accept staff's recommendation, and I'll need a roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye. Motion carries.
Yes, so.
We'll be done before KCBX comes on. Yeah.
That'll be some kind of record.
We planned it that way, right?
Well, that's all right. We can go back up in the office and listen to music then.
Okay. Item C2. Madam Clerk, would you introduce that, please?
Item C2 is a hearing to consider an appeal of the Templeton Road Improvement Fee by the Templeton Community Library Association, First District. Recommendations for denial of the appeal.
Good morning, Supervisor Patterson, members of the board. I'm Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works. Catching my breath. This item, as the last one, deals with the construction of a new public library in the community of Templeton. And associated with the permit for this is a road improvement fee, $83,000 and some change. to avoid the recent increase that came into effect in January, the applicant has actually already paid this fee on the premise that it might not receive any adjustment through this appeal process. So the permit is issued, and any adjustment or waiver would result in a refund as appropriate. The applicant makes their case for their concerns about requesting adjustment of the road improvement fee in their letter, which is attached to the staff report. And the two main points that we've mentioned in our staff report are the concept that adding a new library in Templeton will have the result of reducing traffic overall throughout the northern part of the county, because people who would previously go to libraries in other communities would now be going to the new library there. Certainly that's worthy and we appreciate that, but the basis of calculating the fee is that on this site there is no trip generation currently, and the addition of a library adds more trips to these roads, including the Vineyard Interchange, which is under construction currently, and we feel that an impact fee associated with these new trips is appropriate. And then more generally, the appellant makes some good points about libraries being good for society, and while we appreciate that, they don't help us pay for roads, and so we're kind of stuck. And our recommendation is for denial of this appeal. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Marshall. Any questions from the board or Richard? I see none. I'll open it to the public, and I do have some requests to speak. And if you would like to speak, please do fill out a request to speak form so we can call you up for this. Eric Greening?
Do you want the appellant to present first?
It is an appeal.
It's
an appeal. Go to the appellant first.
You're right. We'll do that. So I guess we have a representative here from the appellant that would like to make a presentation.
I think it was Mr. Wayne Peterson. Wayne Peterson here.
Is there someone representing?
Wayne Peterson. Wayne, you want to make the?
Do I want to? No, not really. I
grew up.
This is not something that I enjoy doing. So. You'll have to forgive me, and I won't be very long. I am the vice president of the Templeton Community Library Association, and my wife and I, a number of years ago, decided we'd like to give something back to the community, and we looked for something that we thought would be on the easy side, no politics involved, and ha ha ha. Anyway, my wife Marcia and I, my wife has been here for like 30 years. I've been here since I retired for a little bit over 5 years. And anyway, I am here to support and ask you to waive these fees. I can't argue with anything that the gentleman just said. I really believe that in our small community that the traffic will probably be less. I don't have anything to back that up. We secured a lease for $1 from the Templeton Unified School District for our site, and we've received probably $250,000 worth of in-kind donations for services. I wish our architect could be here today. His name is Robert McCormick, and he's probably donated more time and services than any one individual. He did email you, your board, and I hope that you've received that. As he pointed out at the library summit, Supervisor Gibson was talking about grassroots efforts, and again, I think we're probably a good example of that. And anyway, with that, I'm going to let people that can do this better than I come up and talk to you. Anyway, I would ask that you do waive our fees. That's it, short and sweet.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson, and we do have your letter in our file. We also did receive a letter from Mr. McCormick, basically paraphrased his comments well, so thank you. I will now then go ahead and open it to the public, and as I call your name, please come up, and you'll have 3 minutes to speak to the item. First request is Eric Greening, the second, Terry Turney.
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening, and
I guess my personal connection with this is I look forward to perhaps a little less congestion in the Atascadero Library as a result of the library next door. But I think there is a very strong case that can be made, even if there are no statistics. It seems like common sense that having a library available to the people of Templeton in Templeton will reduce vehicle miles traveled. Because it's a smaller facility than the ones in Atascadero and Paso Robles, it's unlikely to attract out-of-town trips by people who are already used to going to Atascadero or Paso Robles, but it will be serving the people in the community of Templeton and thereby saving trips to Atascadero and Paso Robles. And as you know, I tend to support any action that can be taken that will reduce vehicle miles traveled in this county for a multiplicity of reasons. That said, I think one mitigation I would like to see the library participate in, although I don't want to hold them completely responsible, right now the North County Shuttle stops several blocks away from the intersection where this library would be, and it's a kind of a difficult intersection to locate a stop because the buses, which are fairly small vehicles as buses go, are making turning movements, and there is quite a bit of congestion around the intersection. But I would like to see the library, the Friends of the Library, and the school district mutually participate in a problem-solving exercise about locating a transit stop for the North County Shuttle somewhere as close as possible to the library and the schools that are around this intersection. And I think that in itself would also help reduce vehicle miles traveled and would be quite a useful mitigation. I don't want it to cost a lot for the library because it is a huge grassroots effort, but I would like to see it become, I know Mr. McCormick and the other people there are very far-sighted and very competent people, and I just hope this can be added to the work, the very good work they're doing in the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Terry Turney, followed by Gwen, it looks like. Piprey, P-E-I-F-R-E-Y.
Hi, I'm Terry Turney. I live in Shell Beach, but I own property on La Cruz Way in the Templeton Community Services District. Not real well prepared because I just read this in the newspaper this morning, but I just wrote an $80,000 check for road fees. I didn't like it much more than they do, but this is how the county has chosen to get money for roads, and I don't think you should change your mind about it. That particular intersection will be impacted by more trips, whether the freeway going to Paso Robles or Atascadero is or not. We all share in these fees, and if you start deferring this and churches, that just puts the burden more and more on people who are paying the fees. You've chosen that. I support the library completely, and if you support the library, maybe you can give them a grant, but don't take the money away from our roads, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Turney. Gwen? Followed by Phyllis Chiotto.
Good morning. Gwen Pelfrey, Templeton resident and also on the board of the Templeton Community Library Association. Giving you just a little background, Templeton's library closed approximately 30 years ago. It was 10 years ago when a Boy Scout came along and asked the community if they wanted to have a library in Templeton, and there was an overwhelming response that yes, that's the effort that the community would like to support. As the Templeton Community Library Association was formed, we have spent approximately the last 8 years in working with the county library division to get a design that would work well, that would be functional, and that has brought us to the application for the building permit and the road fee discussion that we're having today. The citizens of Templeton recognize that there are budgeting issues in the county as far as the library division, and we recognize that the county has many requirements on its funds. But what we are attempting to do is ask for just a portion of what is needed, rather than coming to the board and asking for you to give us an entire library facility. So with our efforts in the waiver of the fees, it's a small percentage of the total. Just to show what support the library has within Templeton, we have approximately 200 local citizens that over the years have been members of the association working towards getting our facility. The, as mentioned before, school district of Templeton has provided the land. The county supervisors actually helped in getting that same land rezoned, so a library was an appropriate facility. And the Templeton Area Advisory Group approved those plans, and there's been hundreds of volunteers that have done fundraising. So when we are looking at the library, it's for the public good, supporting the entire community, and in the waiver of the fees, you would be bringing together the efforts of private and public, which you don't see often enough in today's environment, that the two entities can work together for the common good. So we are asking for the fee waiver, not for ourselves, and it is not self-serving, but instead so that we can continue to give back to the community and ask that you in fact approve the waiver of the fees so that you can participate as well. And we would love to be inviting you to the opening of that same facility one day.
Thank you, Ms. Pelfrey. Phyllis Chiato, followed by Malcolm Pickett.
Good morning, gentlemen of the board, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen assembled. I'm Phyllis Chiato, a resident of Templeton, county native, in fact, native of this beautiful city. I have been in education for many, many years, taught school for 35 years, and understand how very important libraries are. In Templeton, we have an outstanding school system. We're very, very proud of our education there. We feel strongly that it should be accompanied by an outstanding library. So it's commendable that a small group of people in our small community have done what they have to make this happen, and anything that the board can do to make it more feasible for us to come up with these funds would be very much appreciated. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mrs. Chiato. Malcolm Pickett, followed by Judy Rohr.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, and members of the board. I want to thank you for your positive response on the prior item, and wanted to reiterate a couple points. One is Templeton is the only community in the county without a library. We do have a really great grassroots project going, and any help we have from the board would certainly be appreciated. I want to also point out the project is in close proximity, very close proximity, to three out of the four schools in Templeton, within walking distance and easily accessible by students there. And part of the project element, one of the elements of the project, will be to improve the parking lot of the school, the high school, as well as create a parking area for patrons of the library. And I believe we could easily accommodate the proposal from the public member that spoke here earlier about creating a shuttle stop for, or, you know, a stop for the public transit. So anyway, close proximity to the school. We're creating something that will serve the public, not private interest, but serve the public. The new construction on Vineyard, I think, will allow bicycle access from the west side of the town. And overall, it would really be a significant help to the association to not have to shoulder these fees. And I thank you for considering.
And would you state your name for the record?
Malcolm Pickett, board member of the Templeton Community Library Association, Templeton resident.
Very good. Thank you. Judy Rohr, followed by William Van Orden.
Good morning. I'm Judy Rohr, Assistant Library Director. Brian Reynolds could not be here this morning, but he asked me to come and emphasize how supportive the library is of this request. The library is supportive of the Templeton Community Library Association and has been working with TCLA for years. It's clear from the dedication of the community how much Templeton wants and needs a library. The funds are limited, and every penny of fees waived would go towards building the library for Templeton. To give you an idea of how much this community wants a library again, late January, we started a bookmobile stop in Templeton, and the first morning of the bookmobile stop was a rainy Saturday morning, but 50 people showed up at the bookmobile on a rainy morning the first day, and that gives you some idea. When this library is built, it's going to be very popular indeed. And this is a growing community. I think the people that spoke this morning were very articulate in letting you know how much this community wants the library. So I just wanted to let you know how supportive the library is of this this request. So thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you. Last request to speak is William Van Orden.
Morning, Mr. Chairman. Morning. Members of the board, William Van Orden, Templeton resident. I don't have much to add to what has already been said, other than up till June 30th, I was the general manager for the Templeton Community Services District and retired at that time. And I can tell you that I work closely with the association members, and I'm also a new member of the association. I believe in it that strongly. I believe that the residents of the Templeton community are committed to providing the necessary construction, funding, and operational costs associated with the library in Templeton. We could get into discussion about, you know, the improvements that might be necessary at that location because of the new library, but suffice it to say that, you know, the school district has the high school uses that intersection of Vineyard and Main right at the moment. And I just would like to reiterate that there is significant community support for this. And as was said, a waiver of the funding here will go a long way to helping us construct the facility in Templeton. So thank you.
Okay. Mr. Van Orden, could you, we don't have a plan here. I guess Supervisor Obit could do it as well. I'm just curious where the library site is. Is it right there at the intersection of Vineyard and Main, where the high school
correct.
Is?
Right across from the, it would be east side of the high school. You have Main Street, and then you would have the library and the school parking lot right there. Right. So that intersection has been, there have been improvements done to that for in terms of lighting and that type of thing already to accommodate the high school youth that drive to the school. Again, that's during the school year, during the summer months or non-school years. There will be very minimal impact on that particular intersection.
So, thank you. Sure. It's good to see you out. I knew you wouldn't stay retired long.
Thank you. Yeah, don't ask it.
Supervisor Obit.
You're done with the public?
Yes, I'm going to close it to public. I have no more requests to speak, so bring it back. Questions for either the appellant or for staff, Mr. Marshall. Mr. Ovitz up first.
No, I was just going to make a short statement to...
And possibly go to a motion, but whatever
questions. A couple questions, sir.
Yeah, we do questions. Have them. You want to do those first?
I think just to follow up Mr. Chair's request, I believe staff does have a visual that we can share with the public as where its exact location is.
Yeah, the building parallels Vineyard, and it's in that corner, the southeast corner of Main and Vineyard.
Southeast?
Mr. Jansen to the rescue.
Yeah, southeast corner.
So across the street.
Yeah, but the street is actually, it's all high school property.
So with the assistance of my technical aid from planning, north is up in the picture, and so this is right at the location where Vineyard Drive changes names and becomes Templeton Road, and so it says Templeton Road there. Main Street would be at the left edge of the picture. The south extension and the high school would be just off to the left of the screen.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Supervisor Sajjan. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question for planning. Has the permit, the minor use permit or land use or construction permits been issued for this project? No, not yet, but it's close. Okay. So the potential of a condition for creation of a transit stop, which I know has been in other discretionary permits, is open as a possibility at this point.
Well, the minor use permit was approved last year. I don't have the conditions in front of me, but the current permit in process is ministerial, so as you know, we...
That's the question.
Okay.
Okay.
Mr. Robert.
Thank you. To reiterate, I think there's adequate room and circulation in order to create a stop, but I think that there would have to be cooperation between the Library Association and the school in order to create that, because it is school property. This is not county or privately owned property, so that's the process would have to go through. You've heard some of the history on this, and I will tell you that the community already has put time and effort in actually grading that parking lot. They haven't paved it yet; they're waiting for the project, but it is used, so it will be part of the total project. I think the other issue that is always going to come up with this is if the community builds it, how we're going to operate it. And I have discussed with members that is an issue that their committee is going to have to begin to look at almost immediately. I think the community will raise adequate money. I think there will be plenty of volunteers to operate. But we will have to get into discussions as we go through this process looking at the operation. We will not ignore that. The last thing that I wanted to say is that the community has basically made the choice of how to adequately use its funds, and they have asked that the $80,000 here be allocated towards the building of this particular facility as opposed to taking the $80,000 and putting it on the road. The community over the last 17 years or so, as a report says, has raised over almost $10 million from a community of about 6,000 for road improvements, and many of those road improvements we see already completed, and there is activity that is providing funding or will provide funding to meet the obligation that the county had taken on the obligation to support. So the issue at this particular point is, I think that as a community benefit, I would then go ahead and make the motion to waive the appeal fee and the road fee of $83,000 plus, and approve the appeal.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second, but we do have some questions.
That's
and
fine.
Discussion. Supervisor Sajjan, and then Mr. Ed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, my advice to the community members, this reminds me of our efforts on Oceano, putting a library on a school property. My advice is don't stop raising funds as you move forward. The day will come that you'll be happy you did so. But thanks to Supervisor Gibson and his able legislative assistant, Ms. Spiro, I attended the summit, which re-energized our support towards libraries. And I think time has come where we put our money where our mouth is and support the community any which way
we can. It's just a simple partnership that needs to move forward. And libraries, they're not just a luxury, but they are a necessity for every community. There shouldn't be any community without a library. And it's a must that we move forward and expedite their permits, also by waiving all the fees that we can possibly do within our authority. I'd be happy to support the motion.
Okay. Thank you, Supervisor Sajjan. Mr. Edge?
I have no comments.
County Council does.
Yeah.
Mr. McNulty.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office. If there is going to be support for the motion, it's our suggestion that the motion be amended to include the finding that based on the reduction in traffic that it's going to be caused by the building of a local library in Templeton vis-a-vis the other libraries, that there isn't a nexus here that would allow you to impose the road fee. It's in our ordinance that it's one of the requirements that we need to meet in order to grant a waiver.
I would apologize. I assumed that that was already the issue here, that with a reduction in it. And I was going to mention one other thing, too, about the community's involvement. This early on when they started this project, they had almost all the materials and labor established to build this building, and they're now going back and reconfirming that. And as we're well aware of, there is some legislation running around in Sacramento in their ultimate wisdom trying to eliminate volunteers from doing anything anymore, and which I hope does not pass. And I think if we could get this done before that gets passed, it would be a benefit not only to the community, to the county.
Okay, Supervisor Gibson.
And first a question to County Council. Is the action that we're taking based on that finding, which I concur with, would that allow us to waive it conditional on efforts by the Library Association and the school district to create the transit stop? And that would seem to me to be additional evidence of a potential reduction in vehicle miles traveled or reduction in the sorts of things that create the nexus for the road fee.
I think the finding needs to be supported by substantial evidence in the record. You have evidence in the record that approving this library location and building a library here will reduce trips at other libraries, and there's been some testimony on each side of that fact. But if the board were to find that were a fact, adding the transit stop would only help. I don't know, given the limitations that we have that Supervisor Ovid mentioned, that we have no representative here from the school district, and apparently the property in question is actually owned by the school district. I'm not sure if you're creating more problems than you're solving by trying to formally do that directly to this reduction.
And we don't have representatives from the Regional Transit Authority, and I don't know that that would necessarily be a location that they would recommend for the regional route, perhaps for the local route, but.
And I wonder if I could just, with your permission, Mr. Chairman, I wonder if I could just confirm. I heard one board member of the Library Association indicate their interest in working with the school district and the Regional Transit Authority on the possibility of a transit stop for the library. And if I heard that correctly, and just a nod of the head, if that's an indication that the board is interested in that, I would take that as public testimony, further part of the record, that it is part of the effort to reduce vehicle miles traveled and thus support the finding that County Council has suggested that we put
this
in there.
This, I don't think, would have the issue, because the runabout that's being talked about stops at various locations, at the hospital, at the park and ride lot, and this kind of stuff, and there is not other facilities necessary to provide for that stop. It's just the ability, and there is plenty of room within the circulation of this design in order for that vehicle to get in and out and actually stop in front of the library and back out again.
I'll just take it on the basis of public testimony, the inclination. I would just finish by saying I'm tremendously impressed with the efforts of the community of Templeton to organize and fund their own libraries. I wish all communities in our county that kind of support for a very important public institution. It's only with sort of half a beat of hesitation that I support these road fees, because I would simply point out that the $80,000 that's waived here, if this motion passes, delays slightly the repayment of the general fund for the Vineyard Drive interchange. But on the whole, the benefit to be gained by a wide slice of the community far outweighs that that slight delay, and thus I'm quite supportive of Supervisor Ovitt's motion.
Yes, and I'm going to support it as well. I think that you know, you've heard us all comment that we think that there is a nexus for the waiving of the road fees. It's going to reduce traffic on the roads, people staying in town rather than driving, and that's a goal of ours at the Regional Transit Authority. And also the idea that we'd love to see a partnership with the Transit Authority, if at all possible, to provide a site at or near the library if that works out. So we're not going to put that in the record for the reasons that Mr. McNulty stated, but I think it's our intent to try to work with the Council of Governments and the Regional Transit Authority as much as possible to see if we can make that happen. So with that, Supervisor Ovitt, did you have one more?
No, the clerk is requesting that the motion includes upholding the appeal, waiving the appeal fee,
the filing fee.
Okay. And the findings as stated by Mr. McNulty of Nexus.
And the road fee.
And the road fee.
Okay. And the second concurs?
Absolutely.
Okay. So
if you don't disagree with
you
that.
Have a voice vote on this, Madam Clerk,
yes,
is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So all in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
I think most of your board is aware that Mr. Marshall, after many years' service to the county, has been tempted away. Fie on my colleagues up in Northern California, but they have
Marin County.
they've tempted him away. It's Napa County, I believe. And he'll be missed, not the least of which is we'll miss the ties. And I hope you'll leave me that one. But one of the best contributions.
You're not the one with the little car on it and the highway.
But I would like to say, in all seriousness, Richard has made a lot of contributions to the county over the years. Perhaps one of the most beneficial to us, paradoxically, is his ability and skills as a mentor and a developer of staff, and we hope that that will reflect that we'll be able to continue operations smoothly when he has left us, because there'll be people that he's trained able to step in and help out with the programs. And so I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Richard and wish him well and great success up north.
You're here.
Supervisor Sajjan, don't go away, Richard. We're not
through. I like to receive the tie with a gas pump on it.
Speaking of ties, the one in his honor, I think we ought to take that tie that Jim Lindholm had with the tongue hanging out. There's a lot of them out there. Right.
That's the Rolling Stones tie. Right?
It's sad to see Richard go, but worse than that, it's sad to see another customer leave town.
Another customer.
Supervisor Lindholm.
I'm always sorry to see Richard go, but I think what Dave was talking about in the mentorship for a team player, how Richard so smoothly just says, Matt, help me out with some technical things over here, and was never afraid to say, this is a public works issue, but I need some help from the planning department or any other department. And Richard, I don't know too many people that ever told you no, and so that's part of your success. So you're going to be missed.
Am I to assume that this is your last appearance before us?
Actually, since you asked, no, I'm planning to bring back before your board the item regarding the rural road improvement policies before I go.
And I'm
kind of counting on you to approve it without continuing it further, because that will be my last day.
Well, I'll save my comments till after that. But I've, the number of years I've been here, I think, I can't say any more than what you've said, other than chasing Richard around Public Works trying to figure out what job he really has, because he's had a multitude, and that's why he can train people, because he's had all the different jobs. Our loss is going to be Napa's gain, but you won't like their wine.
It's more expensive.
It's true.
Thank you all very much.
Yeah.
Thank you, Richard.
Of course, I'll see your county supervisor tomorrow.
Thank you for
coming
out this morning. We appreciate you all being here. The next item on the agenda is closed session, and I'm going to ask County Council if his team is ready, or should we give him a little lead time and appear in closed session at say 10 o'clock, or what's your feeling? You have.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Wyatt Cash, County Council. 10 o'clock would be fine. Your board will be meeting on items listed on the agenda at that time and for approximately 45 minutes.
Okay, great. Before we adjourn to closed session, I need to ask if there's anyone in the audience that would like to speak on items on the closed session agenda. Seeing none, I'll close it and bring it back to the board and adjourn to closed session. We'll convene upstairs at 10 a.m. Please take your seats.
No.
We'll convene the meeting this afternoon.
No. Jeanette.
Would you mind closing the doors in the back, please?
Yeah, it's on. You're on. You should be on.
Thank you. Welcome to the afternoon session of the April 15th, San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors.
Turn up there.
Turn the volume up.
Another volume. We have a technical problem here. We'll get it resolved momentarily, I'm sure.
There we are.
We good?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're on.
Okay, thank you. We'll have a report out of closed session. Warren?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. The board did meet in closed session on some of the items listed on the agenda. No final action was taken, so no further reports required.
Thank you. We'll open the afternoon session with public comment for items not on today's agenda, and I have a few requests to speak in public comment. Please come forward when I call your name. Susie Brunner, followed by Bruce Payne. Ms. Brunner.
Hi, my name is Susie Brunner. I work for Dan Duvall at Sunny Acres Ranch. We'd like to let the board and the community know that the Agricultural and Beautification Committee of our Community Volunteer Force has developed a project whereby 110 shrubs will be planted along the southwest end of the ranch. The shrubs will act as a site screen as they grow to maturity. As part of the program, residents of Sunny Acres will be preparing the holes for planting, installing the irrigation lines, and will nurture and maintain the trees. Sunny Acres would welcome San Luis Obispo, its boards of supervisor, county employees, and their families to attend our planting event on April 26. Planting will begin at 8 o'clock a.m. In addition to this event, our friends at Heritage Foods in Santa Maria will be sponsoring an open house and luncheon on the ranch on May 3rd between the hours of 10 and 3 p.m. Again, Sunny Acres would like to extend an invitation to the community to come visit the ranch to meet our residents, our staff, and our many community volunteers. We'd welcome you to walk the property. We think you may be surprised by the quality of the people you meet and by the improvements the folks at Sunny Acres have made over the past few months. Thank you.
Thank you. Bruce Payne, followed by Gwen Taylor.
Good afternoon. I'm Bruce Payne, resident of Los Osos. I'm here mostly to tell the rest of the county about the Water Quality Control Board's meeting. Will be May 9th in 2008, and they're going to approve two resolutions, R3-2008-0005, amends the basin plan, and adopt the resolution number R3-2008-006, waiver of waste discharge requirements for on-site wastewater system discharges. Welcome. Six counties get the same treatment that Los Osos has had for 20 years. And it was a big joke. The Tribune printed lots of really bad things about Los Osos that weren't true. But now you get the same treatment. Roger Briggs is going to be able to issue you a waiver for your waste discharge. It'll cost you a fee, probably annually. It'll be controlled by local jurisdictions, such as the memorandum of understanding that the county used to have, which, by the way, we're told it expired in June of 2004. Do those things have an expiration date on them, like driver's license? Also, some of this stuff that's going on is they're looking at MOUs, updating them. Some of them have been are more than 25 years old. I wonder if any of those had expiration date on them. Anyway, welcome to the Water Board's fun thing. And by the way, the Tribune can print things like this notice here. This little notice was in the back with the legal statements. And there's nothing in an article about these resolutions they're going to pass, which will become law. 8313 was a resolution. It became law. I noticed on today's agenda there were six resolutions, counting the last one you're going to handle next. These resolutions will become law. So you'll be in the same thing. Now, the Tribune can also print stuff like the poopulator and snake oil salesman things, but they can't put an article in about a bunch of resolutions that are going to become law that are going to cost you money and recommend that you have a waiver of discharge for your septic tank in six counties, by the way. This basin plan is going to cover four full counties and two partial counties. Any questions?
No. Thank you, Mr. Payne.
Thank you.
Gwen Taylor, followed by Chris Alibi.
Good afternoon. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos, residing in the Prohibition Zone. I beseech this board to take action and implement a moratorium on the issuance of any further permits for the community of Los Osos or Baywood Park. Saltwater intrusion doesn't stop because there are no additional purchases of water or additional developments. We have problems. Even in the Prohibition Zone, there are new developments taking place. We have a problem with a school and schools that are promoting the idea of drilling for water. The water in the basin is for everyone in the community. If the schools drill wells, they will have one more straw in that fragile soda glass that we are all drawing from. The county and the different purveyors are supposed to sit down and have what they call an adjudication. Once a month? Please, once a month is not going to handle the problem that has been taking place for a very long time. I would hope that this board takes into consideration that we are in a dire strait. There is no additional water available from any other area. Please do not force us to turn on our faucets and find nothing but saline water coming out because of your lack of due diligence of our community. Take this into consideration. Please don't wait any longer. Wait is what broke the camel's back. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Chris Alibi, followed by Ben DeFata.
Chris Alvey, CEO number 1019. Now, I'm going to read some excerpts here from a publication called Mother Earth News concerning septic systems. Homeowners across the United States are being confronted by regulators and engineers decreeing that their septic systems are failing and must be replaced by complex and expensive alternatives. It's a trend that's been gaining momentum over the last decade for both single-family homes and community sewer systems. Many of these expensive systems are unnecessary and being forced on homeowners under the false pretense in order to generate maximum income, namely federal clean water grants. For several years, we've been working with science researcher John Hulls, attempting to educate homeowners about septic systems so they can deal intelligently with officials when confronted with expensive upgrades. This article summarizes our advice. The push for the expensive wastewater disposal is not a movement. There are no central headquarters. Rather, it's a recurring theme. Why is there virtually no media attention to this phenomena? Well, septic systems are underground, out of sight, out of mind, and they tend to work so well and silently that people are scarcely aware of their function. I've been amazed by the scale, by the lack of accountability, by the hoodwinking of the public, and by so many homeowners placidly accepting their fate. If you own a home with a septic system and haven't been pushed to upgrade to an extensive new system yet, I bet you will in 5 years. The amount of money to be made is just too great for this new industry to slow down on its own accord. The players involved, you will encounter four categories of people who promote expensive septic systems: engineers, regulators, developers, and misguided environmentalists. Engineers, don't assume that an academic degree necessarily ensures competent design, skill, or honesty. We've seen civil engineers repeatedly distort science and dupe the public in order to justify exorbitant fees. Remember, that's in their interest for systems to be failing. John T. Weinbrenner, a botanist and a renowned engineer in advocating on-site sewage disposal as opposed to sewers for small towns, Weinberger says that claims of health hazards from failing systems are vastly exaggerated, and accusations of pollution are more political than scientific, and that the field is rife with misinformation. He says there's no scientific evidence that people get ill from failing septic systems. It's really immaterial.
Mr. Abe, please wrap up. Your time is up.
Okay. All right. Let's see here. Oh. Okay, since then, I've seen the same modus operandi in small towns countrywide. For an instance, there is another California town currently wrestling with a multi-million-dollar ripoff of homeowners and taxpayers.
Thank you, Mr.
This
Alvey.
Is in Los Osos.
Thank you. Ben DiFata, followed by Al Barrow.
Good afternoon, supervisors. Ben DiFata here again. Going to hear repeats over and over. I concur with Mrs. Taylor said. I could drink nitrated water, but I can't drink salt water. So that is a very important thing that we got to get done first. Again, I want to see an investigation as to why the Santa Isabel Traffic Calming Project cost nearly $1 million for six oval islands, a few curves, and a bunch of rocks. Now, I'd like to see that investigation. Now, downtown Baywood looks like Baghdad, Iraq, instead of Baywood Park, on Santa Maria Street and 2nd Street. If that house and garage needs to be torn down and hauled away, well, why doesn't somebody make it happen? Why is it that this little project to expand a motel never gets done? What's the problem? Number three, please ask Bob Algren, where is the economical affordability study? He said in October, around Christmas time. He said in January for sure, and we're still waiting for it. We want to know if it's going to cleanse of those in the prohibition zone, the self. Oh boy. All right. Number four, the cell towers at Los Angeles Valley Road and South Bay Boulevard, your wisdom on allowing this project to proceed boggles our mind. Let's see, 600 residents signed a petition for no in the project. The fact that the Los Angeles Advisory Council voted against this project did not seem to faze you also. It also seems you had no concern that those offices would be occupied by many people working 8 hours a day sitting within 20, 40, 60 feet away from the antenna's radiation blast, and that you still went on and proceeded to allow this antenna installation to be built. Now, somebody, one of you guys, got 7 emails saying they wanted to be built there, and this, in his mind, trumped 600 signatures that homeowners signed that did not want it there. Well, that's the worst logic I've ever heard since former Supervisor Bianchi said, we have to build a sewer in town because you can't cross a creek with a sewer pipe. That kind of wisdom is not what we need when it comes to voting for a sewer project for homeowners and renters of Los Osos, knowing that if the cost exceeds $100 a month, I'm looking at you, sewer and maintenance, not just for the plants, the sewer and maintenance. 3,000 homeowners will then have to be able to move out of Los Osos. They can't afford it. If you build this expensive sewer in town or out of town, it will make headlines all over the country. The solution is staring you right in the face. Mr. Murphy's recommender is here. The Tom Crapper way of getting rid of waste or over with, too. You and your staff don't have the decency to study the recommender. And I'll just go down the road here. Get on the board with the new, I'm sorry?
Okay, wrap up, please.
Wrap up? I got a minute.
Well, she didn't get started for a couple of minutes, so go ahead and wrap up, please.
Get on board with the new way of saving water and energy. The boat is leaving as we speak, and where is Maldonado these days? Oh, I forgot. We only see him in election time. He's probably smoking a $20 cigar with Arnold. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tafada. Al Barrow, followed by Richard Margetson.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Barrow from Los Osos, and I'm going to speak on an affordable sewer in Los Osos today. Before I do, I'd like to just say welcome back to Bruce Gibson. Glad to see that you're feeling recovering, and I'd like to say hi to everybody out there that's watching at home. What I want to talk about is I believe that the step-stag collection method is the least expensive because we can take advantage of our hills. We have a 70% of the cost of a sewer generally is collection. So the hills that we have will offer us the gravity of a STEG system, which is called septic tank effluent gravity system. So about 60% of our sewer could be gravity. That lowers the cost of energy that we would have to do. So step stag is the preferable one for collecting. You get primary treatment out of your septic tanks. So when you go to the next phase, which is the treatment section, you have less energy demand. And when it comes to that, I believe we should have a natural system because it's far less energy demands and much more environmentally protective than would be a conventional plant, which might cost a million kilowatts per year of energy, a big carbon footprint. We want to shrink our carbon footprint because of global warming, AB 32. So I recommend that we have a pond system, and then that followed up by a disposal onto redwood trees, which are a cash crop, which reduce the cost of the project. These are native species that will take up to 500 gallons a day when they're mature. When they're young, the first part, they start at 50, 100 gallons, so you have to grow more trees to begin with. But basically, you have to weigh that with putting some ag app for other things like growing some switchgrass or something that could be environmentally protective for biodiesel fuel or something like that, some kind of cash crop. But I think we can, instead of looking at it as wastewater, we need to look at it as resource water, because it will grow things for us, and it will grow things that will grow our pocketbooks and our revenue stream. And I think that's really important part of the project. We're depending an awful lot on federal, state grants, when we should be depending on our ability to create revenue with our project, and we can do that. So I'm just recommending that everybody think about that, that we can use whatever the cash crop is, whether it's redwood trees or switchgrass or some other thing, can be beneficial reuse for us. We do have about 750,000 gallons of water in our aquifer. Our aquifer, aside from the lower aquifer, which has 450,000, is running out into the bay. So we don't need so much to save that water as we do to reuse it properly. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. Richard Margetson, followed by Karen Stern.
Richard Margetson, I want to talk for a minute about the shrub planting at Sunny Acres on the 26th. I want to give the address. It's 10660 Los Osos Valley Road. The morning of April 26th, they're going to plant, this is out of my league, so I hope I'm saying this right, 55 native toyon shrubs and 55 native coffee berry. In fact, one of them actually is dedicated to Mr. Gibson.
The toyon or the coffee berry?
I don't know. That I don't know. I think this would be a great opportunity for the supervisors to visit Sunny Acres that Saturday morning, especially the three that are running for re-election. And I hope somewhere in the campaign process you're not asked the question also if sometime during your career as a supervisor, if you visited both the Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter for a tour and the Prado Day Center. I hope all of you have that on your resume. The other thing I wanted to talk about today is, I think it's still on the agenda for next Tuesday, the two water conservation ordinances that are going to be coming before you. I want to speak on the one dealing with Title 8, the retrofit upon sale. I voiced my concerns that you don't have a mechanism to enforce this through the real estate community, and there's been a number of arguments on the other side. But I want you to keep in mind and maybe think back, how many realtors have you heard from or listened to at this podium that actually have an office in Los Osos that are actually going to be dealing with it firsthand? I think the number is going to be very small, if anyone other than myself. And I talked about disclosure responsibilities quickly with my last 30 seconds. We used to have a forum. It was called the Local Residential Disclosure. It had all kinds of things on it. It had for each county or each community along the coast. Four things in here about the sewer project. Number of things, Diablo Canyon, Coastal Commission, all those. The Scenic Coast Association of Board decertified that disclosure a month ago. We now have no mechanism that's required for giving those type of disclosures. And if you don't have a disclosure for this, you're going to have a problem down the road. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Margetson. Karen Stern? Okay. I do need your name for the record. Thank you.
My name is Karen Stenson, and I've been the executive director of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Services for 9 years. I am also a member of the Senior Services Coalition. The coalition's purpose is to share with you the needs of senior citizens in our community and to explain both our existing services and unmet needs. Before I tell you more about our program, I would like to invite you all to attend a few upcoming events. On May 9th, the Adult Abuse Prevention Council here in San Luis Obispo County will be hosting an Elder and Dependent Adult Abuse Prevention Seminar. Anyone who's interested in more information on that can call me at 785-0132. In addition, the Area Agency on Aging will be hosting on May 20th an Older Americans Act celebration and recognition luncheon. And for more information on that event, people can call Joyce at 541-0384. Ombudsman Services advocates for people living in nursing or residential care facilities throughout San Luis Obispo County. We work with residents and their families to resolve any complaints or concerns that people may have and to ensure that they are getting the care and the services they are supposed to be getting. We are fortunate that most of our care facility residents receive good care. However, this is not always the case. Recently, we investigated a case where an elderly man in a wheelchair was left outside of his care facility and told by a staff person that he could not come back in the building until he was acted better. Eventually, he was let back into the building. The staff member who did this had not had a day off of work for more than 2 months. We are currently working with the care facility owner and several other agencies to ensure that this type of problem does not reoccur. And today that man is receiving good care, and he is living without the fear of abandonment, which is what happened to him. While this case may seem extreme, it is a real example of the reason we need strong, well-funded senior services and agencies to ensure that our elderly loved ones, neighbors, and friends are provided with the care and services they need and deserve. I would love to talk more about our services, but 3 minutes of public comment make it difficult, particularly for anyone who knows how long I usually talk. Anyone who has questions about the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program is welcome to call me. I can be reached at, again, 785-0132. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to talk with you today. Next month, Barry Johnson from Transitions Mental Health will be talking to you from our coalition about other senior services that are available. And as a reminder about the critical need for senior services in our community, I would like to remind you that by the time Barry comes next month, 30 more people in our county will turn 85 years old. In addition, nationwide, one senior will be victimized every 3 minutes. So for every public comment you hear today, one senior in this country is being abused or victimized. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That was my last request to speak for public comment, so we'll move on in the agenda with item D1. Madam Clerk, would you introduce the item, please?
Next item on your agenda is item D1. It's the update on the proposed sale of the county-owned land at Oceano Dunes to State Park and submittal of a resolution extending the existing operating agreement with the State of California Department of Parks and Recreation for 584 acres of county-owned real property located within the Oceano Dunes State Vehicular Recreational Area and Pismo Dunes Natural Preserve in the 4th District. Recommendation is for approval and authorize the General Services Director to sign the extension.
Okay, thank you, Madam Clerk. Good afternoon, Chairman Patterson and members of the board. My name is Karen Madalena, and I'm your County Real Property Manager. On behalf of the General Services Agency Director, Jeanette Pell, I'm here today with my associate, Linda Van Fleet, and County Planning Staff, Matt Jansen, to present two items. The first will be a staff report updating the public on the status of the negotiations with the State of California over the proposed sale of the property, and second is a request for your board to approve by a 4/5 vote a resolution allowing the General Services Agency Director to sign an extension to the current operating agreement, which will allow continued discussions with the state relative to the disposition of the property. And this would be for a period of up to 24 months. With that, I will turn this presentation over to Associate Real Property Agent Linda Van Fleet for presentation of the staff report.
Good afternoon to the board and to you all. We'd like to start with a brief overview. The county owns 4,399 lots in Oceano, totaling 584 acres and zoned recreation. They are mostly located within the Oceano Dunes State Vehicular Recreation Area, with 16 acres located in the Pismo Dunes Natural Preserve. The map on the screen shows the state-owned land in red and the county-owned land in green or blue. The park boundary is shown in yellow. The state owns the majority of the park, but the county's property makes up about 1/3 of the dunes riding area for off-road vehicles. The county land is not one large parcel, but is actually broken up by scattered lots owned by private parties or by the state. Vehicular recreation has taken place on Pismo and Oceano beaches and on the county's land since the early 1900s. At one point, a pavilion and pier were built around 1905, but neither survived for long. Most of the county's property is located within an old subdivision called the La Grande Beach Tract, dated 1905. In total, the tract is comprised of more than 6,000 tiny lots and approximately 80 streets and alleys, although the sand dune terrain makes it difficult to locate lots and streets. The development was unsuccessful. No streets or utilities were ever installed. Eventually, the bank took back thousands of the lots and sold them to the county in 1944. The rest of the county-owned land was acquired through property tax default or donation. Portions of the tract have been acquired by the state, and 42 private property owners still have some lots as well. The large parcel on the south end of the tract, however, was never subdivided and is owned by the county. Off-roading gained enormous popularity in the 60s and 70s, and the county had difficulty maintaining order on its land. The county was sued repeatedly as a result of accidents, and vehicles had unrestricted access to a much larger riding area, causing damage to private property and to environmental resources. The state vehicular recreation area was created in 1971 and has been managed by State Parks Off-Highway Motor Vehicle Recreation Division since 1982. Park operations are subject to a coastal development permit issued by the California Coastal Commission that specifies approved entry points, camping areas, off-roading areas, capacity limitations for vehicles, and habitat protection requirements. In 1982, the Coastal Commission approved the state's first coastal development permit for entry kiosks and fencing. The following year, the county approved a 25-year operating agreement with the state that expires June 20, 2008. In lieu of monetary payment, the state indemnified the county from liability and accepted all responsibilities and costs associated with managing the property. The park receives more than 2 million visitors annually. Over the years, the state has made other offers for the county's property that have stalled during negotiations. In June 2006, the property was independently appraised for $4.8 million, and in March 2007, the county received a $4.8 million offer from the state. California Code provides for transfers of property between two government agencies with a 4/5 vote of the board. Supervisor Ashajian has recused himself from this decision due to his business interests near the park. On April 17, 2007, the sale was proposed to the board, and several hours of public testimony was heard, both in favor and against the proposal. The board decided to continue negotiations in closed session before bringing it back for public input. The board selected a team to negotiate with the state and to report back to them. The board directed the team to work on an agreement that protected the county's interests, but also presumed that the OHV park would continue to operate. The board also ordered a review appraisal by an independent appraiser selected by the county, and the review appraisal supported the $4.8 million valuation. The negotiating team held several meetings with the state and obtained additional input from the Coastal Commission. State Parks requested that the funding be reallocated through the state budget, and it is now allocated through June 2010. The original offer proposed acquisition in two phases due to funding constraints, but phasing of the purchase is no longer proposed due to the new funding allocation. Planning issues have come up repeatedly during the past year, much of it related to planning jurisdiction. In June 1982, prior to approval of the county's local coastal plan that had been submitted the previous year, the Coastal Commission approved State Park's first coastal development permit to install fencing and to enclose the OHV riding area and place entry kiosks at Grand and Pier Avenue. In the permit, the majority of the county-owned land was included as part of the OHV riding area. In June 1983, the county agreed to a 25-year operating agreement with State Parks to manage the county lands as part of the SVRA. The county's land use plan was not certified by the Coastal Commission until 1984 and was revised, by and large, to reflect the conditions of State Park's coastal development permit. The apparent inconsistency between the county's local coastal plan, State Park's general plan, and the coastal development permit issued to State Parks by the Coastal Commission have resulted in some legal action. The Friends of Oceano Dunes has filed suit against the county, contesting the board's determination that the proposed sale is partially inconsistent with the general plan, although the board may still approve a sale regardless of their findings on general plan conformity. In a separate item, the Sierra Club has notified State Parks in a letter titled Notice of Intent to Commence Litigation, dated February 21, 2008, that they intend to sue State Parks if State Parks does not commit to revise the park's general development plan to conform with the county's local coastal plan. State Parks has declined the demand. The issue of alternative access to the park has also been discussed with State Parks. The permit issued to State Parks by the Coastal Commission in 1982 allowed an interim staging area at the beach south of Oceano, accessed from Grand Avenue or Pier Avenue, but required a permanent staging area site to be selected that was the least environmentally damaging alternative, among other requirements. State Parks, however, has determined that the current access and staging areas are permanent, and they amended the park's general plan in 1994 to reflect this decision. This decision was based on their access corridor EIR done in 1991, not 1994, please note a correction in the staff report, which determined that these sites to be the least environmentally damaging alternative. It was further supported by their alternative access study in 2006. Coastal Commission staff has requested State Parks to submit a permit amendment requesting that the alternative permanent access requirement be deleted and or the pier and Grand Avenue access points be considered permanent. It is possible that State Parks may also be required to submit to the Coastal Commission for a permit amendment as a result of their habitat conservation plan, which they are currently preparing for the park and for all state parks located in San Luis Obispo County. The draft version is estimated to be available for public review by the end of 2008, although the timing will depend upon the review by several agencies. Much of the recent discussions with state parks have centered around the physical impacts of 2 million visitors per year to the local community. Local residents ask for improved traffic circulation and law enforcement, traffic removal, and sand removal. Local service districts have also felt the burden of servicing the utility infrastructure related to tourist impacts in their community. Some residents of Oceana would like to see the main entry to the dunes moved in order to reduce the traffic congestion along Pier Avenue. They would also like to have a vehicle-free beach in Oceana. Some local business owners, however, would like the existing entry to remain. A 2007 Cal Poly study titled Economic Impact of Oceano Dunes SVRA Visitors was recently released that indicates an estimated $101.4 million in economic benefit is created by visitors to the park. Direct expenditures were estimated at nearly $76 million, mostly in the Five Cities area. The county receives approximately $139,000 a year in funding now from the state's Off-Highway Vehicle in Lieu Fund, intended to mitigate impacts created by the SVRA. During the past year, the county has received far more requests for funding from the In Lieu Fund than money is available. In previous years, the In Lieu Fund received only about $8,000 a year, but a change in legislation resulted in a new method of calculation and an increase to San Luis Obispo County as of 2006. Nevertheless, this funding source is subject to changes in legislation that can affect funding dramatically. Grant funding is also available to state parks for OHV-related impacts, but grants are not a guaranteed source of funding. The county is seeking to establish a separate source of funding to assure the county's ability to respond to the ongoing impacts from the SVRA, and a legislative solution is being investigated. The proposed sale of the county's land at Oceano Dunes to state parks has clearly raised very complex questions. The negotiating team is not in a position to recommend either in favor or against the sale at this time. The critical concern that comes up repeatedly is how can the county deal with the problems created by the SVRA? What control do we have? Does the county have any leverage on the operations of the park through the various planning and environmental processes? Do we have sufficient funding to deal with the physical impacts of the park on our communities? The offer of $4.8 million is certainly tempting when the county suffers from a significant budget shortfall. But does continuing ownership of the land give the county some control over the state's activities at the SVRA? Fortunately, we may have the opportunity to work on answers to these questions since the funding for State Parks' acquisition of the county land, though not 100% guaranteed, is not due to expire until June 2010. The operating agreement, however, expires on June 20, 2008, about 2 months from now. Many have suggested that the county allow the operating agreement to terminate and then prohibit access of OHVs to the county's land. Since the county land makes up approximately one-third of the off-roading area, this could be a significant impact to the operation of the park. The county's primary purpose in agreeing to the 1982 operating agreement with State Parks was to indemnify the county from liability. The county receives no revenue from the agreement. Subsequent changes to the law, however, have reduced the county's liability as landowner. Although the county would still likely be named in some litigation, liability issues are no longer a primary justification for the operating agreement. The negotiating team, however, does not recommend allowing the operating agreement to terminate at this time. State Parks has confirmed their commitment to continue the OHV activity of the park, even if OHV recreation were prohibited on the county land, and has stated that the county property must still remain open to the public in accordance with the county's general plan. It is their position that the county would assume all law enforcement and public safety responsibilities for the property and would be required to maintain the public restrooms and fences and would be responsible for all resource management and endangered species protection on the county's land. They further assert that OHV access to the La Grande Beach Tract must remain open to the public due to the recorded streets and alleys in the tract. One thing is clear, the La Grande Beach Tract should not have been subdivided into thousands of tiny lots. In order to sensibly manage the land, it should eventually be reassembled into larger parcels. But how is this property going to be cohesively managed now? The state and county had at one point discussed a joint powers agreement for joint management of the property, sharing in the revenues and expenses. State Parks has determined, however, that a joint powers agreement is not economically viable and would not result in a steady stream of income for the county. We have also discussed a new operating agreement that would include rental income to the county, but State Parks has listed as a basic assumption that any agreement, other than a fee sale, must be for at least 40 to 50 years, and that any funding received by the county for use of the property would be used for the benefit of the SVRA or to mitigate direct OHV impacts. The negotiating team would not currently recommend an agreement with such a long term and with restrictions on the use of the revenue. The decision whether or not to sell the county's land at Oceano Dunes is extremely complex from a planning, environmental, and economic point of view. The negotiating team and the General Services Agency suggests a temporary solution at this time and recommends approval by a 4/5 vote of the board of a month-to-month extension of the current operating agreement with State Parks, not to exceed 2 years in length. The extension would not change the terms of the existing agreement. With your board's approval, this agreement would be negotiated and signed by the General Services Agency Director and returned to the state for signature. Some may wonder what new information may be received in order to justify any extension. One item that needs further exploration is the possibility that the county could create an additional entrance fee legislatively to be used to pay for SVRA impacts to local agencies. Another issue that needs clarification is what method does the county or the public have to enforce the conditions of the coastal development permit on state parks. It would also be informative to see the draft habitat conservation plan to see whether it addresses alternative access in any way as a result of habitat protection. And if pending litigation on planning issues results in a ruling by the courts, that would help in our analysis as well. Certainly, we will not have resolution to all of these issues before it is necessary to make a decision on the sale. But recent months have brought forth some relevant information, and if we can be patient a bit longer, we hope to have a better understanding of our options. We thank you for the opportunity to bring this update and recommendation to your board, and that completes our recommendation.
Thank you, Ms. Bensley. You got your reading exercise in this morning, or this afternoon. Are there any questions for members of the board for staff at this point? Yes. Go ahead. You want to try that again?
I'll try it again. I want to publicly recognize and thank former Supervisor Howard Meinkins for being here today and looking forward to any historical knowledge and information that he has to bring forward.
Thank you, Supervisor Linthal. We'll move now with the public comment portion of this item. I want to remind everyone that what we're here to do today is two things, and we've just done one, and that's get an update on what the negotiating team has been doing the past year, and basically provide a status report on where we are with this process. And the second thing is to simply authorize the extension of the current operating agreement with the state in order to give the county and the state additional time to negotiate the terms and address the issues that have been raised. So please keep that in mind as we move through the public comment period. Certainly you're free to express your desires regarding the Oceano Dunes Park, and you're welcome to do that, but we won't be making decisions today on whether to close the park or sell the property or do whatever. We're simply going to determine whether or not to authorize our General Services Director to sign an agreement with the state extending the operating agreement for up to 24 months on a month-by-month basis. So with that, we have about an hour and a half, if everyone speaks 3 minutes, an hour and a half worth of public testimony, so please state your case within the 3 minutes, less if you can do that. And I'll call forward Dr. Nell Langford, followed by Marcia Lilly. Dr. Nell Langford, can you hear me? Good afternoon.
Folks, the microphone is taking the effort of people speak, so you have to give at least a short time for it to catch up. Thank you.
And one thought that I've had is people, my experience at the lectern is, if you're trying to communicate to that end of the dais without amplification, you know, try to project your voice to the opposite ends of the dais, that should give you about enough volume to get picked up on the microphone. So just pretend you're talking to the far end without a mic, and I think everything might work out pretty well.
Hello over there.
There you go.
Dr. Nell Langford, and thank you, Board of Supervisors. I know you've been in closed session a long time. Well, what do you know? Would you play the other one instead? The other one. May I please have a few minutes for technical difficulties? I had a DVD with sound that I really want the public to hear, but we thought we'd be without sound, so I selected one that it didn't matter if it had sound or not. So if I may please have the other DVD, then you won't have to listen to me, but you can listen to someone much more important, Larry Allen, who is the director of the San Luis Obispo County Air Pollution District.
We have about 10 different monitoring sites throughout the county where we measure particulate pollution. And the particulate that we're most concerned with is our particles that are below 10 microns in diameter, which for comparison purposes, the diameter of a human hair is about 60 microns. So we're looking at very fine particles, and those are actually the coarse particles. The smaller particles, 2.5 microns, and below are called fine particles. And all of these can have very significant health effects when they enter your respiratory system, because they're very difficult to remove from your body. And the very fine ones can stay there for a long time. And they definitely cause respiratory problems with those, definitely the very young, the elderly, and those that have some type of compromised respiratory system already, like asthma, bronchitis, emphysema, and so forth. So it is a significant concern to us that we found that, well, first of all, that we're violating every state and federal health standard for particulate matter on the MESA. And for the state standard, state 24-hour standard, which is 50 microns per cubic meter, we violate about 25% of the days throughout the year for that standard, which is fairly high. And what our study showed was that the largest portion, by far, of the particulate that we're seeing out there is coming in the form of elemental crustal material basically sand, silica, coming off the upland areas of the dunes. Once the monitoring is completed, it's going to take us several months to go through the data and have a look at what it shows us. And I expect that, you know, if we finish monitoring, say, the end of January in 2009, that we probably won't have a report completed until probably August or September of 2009. So sometime in the fall of 2009, we'll have some results. So it will not be, the data will not be available really to shed much light on the sale of that piece of property, which has to occur by June, I guess.
Thank you for your time, and if you'd like the full report, it's at www.safebeachanddunes.org. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Langford. Marsha Lilly, followed by Craig Angelo.
Good afternoon. My name is Marsha Lilly, and I'm a resident of Esalo County. I'm here today as a person with no invested interest in Oceano. I did rent there for 3 years and became familiar with what Shirley McCain might term the blister on the butt of humanity that exists there because of rampant disregard for law, environmental health, lawful statutes trample flora and fauna, and even human life. The council meets here today to decide part of the fate and future of that piece of California coast, which began, yes, as innocent recreation and family fun, but now has burgeoned into a multi-million-dollar, 2 million visitor a year, very dangerous and uncontrollable business, one which appears has lost all the glamour of public trust in public figures who might preserve wonders for the enjoyment of all, but instead have devoted themselves to a few. Tons of proof has been presented to the negative and detrimental effects this family fun recreation now represents. Experts hired for environmental impact studies have told Oceano Dunes State Vehicle Recreation Area and its representatives to cut back campsites, restrict amount and types of vehicles traversing the area, enforce hours of entry and exit, even at one time find another entrance in time and get out, ideas that have been consistently ignored or overrun and even reversed as the ODSVRA has continually expanded, for instance, adding camp size against advice at one time, which were 250 to 1,000, and working diligently to encroach upon the entire area until it controls everything. The county land encompasses a buffer area. Peter Douglas, advisor to the California Coastal Commission, advised the state and state parks not to buy it because the laws protecting the buffer area, which means no vehicles are there to be permitted, would never change. Why then do they want to buy it? Because they know neither Peter Douglas or the Air Quality Board or Fish and Game, the Coastal Commission, nor any one of you will be standing there to remind them of the delineation between the buffer zone and the area after they own it. Once those vehicles drop down onto the sand in Oceano, I promise you it becomes the Wild West. The county has allowed the state to manage their land for 25 years for nothing under an operating agreement that is practically unconditional. It has been said over and over that the reason for that was to protect the county from lawsuits. Since that agreement, that law has come about, which you spoke about today, where it protects public entities from being sued for actions occurring on unimproved land. The county has never improved the land. And if the state has, or more importantly, if it does, they have created the liability, which would make the county liable. The state itself is liable for denuding the vegetation on said land and reducing the air quality by sending particulate matter into the air when their vehicles break the natural crust of the dunes. I urge you to find it near, not to sell the land ever, but if you're going to lease it for a time, put conditions in the operating agreement. Ask yourselves, if any one of you owned an oceanfront lot in Oceano and your neighbor wanted to manage it for you, would you give them carte blanche and for no remuneration?
Your time is up. Thank you. Craig Angelo, followed by Jerry Bedell.
Good afternoon. My name is Craig Angelo. I've lived in Oceano my whole life. Multiple generations of my family have lived there. I come at you from two aspects, that being one that's lived there my whole life. I grew up in the park. I chose to stay in Oceano because of the park, because I enjoy off-roading. I enjoy taking my family down there. I personally was there for years, you know, with my parents, going down there every weekend, riding, having fun. The other aspect is that my family now and in the past 10 years has owned a business related to the dunes. We have an ATV rental business. And the bottom line, it, to me, is common sense. The county does not have the capability of maintaining the property, of putting up the fencing, of policing it, and providing for emergency services out there. They can't legally close it because of the private property owned and the state-owned property. So you can't put a big fence up around it. It just, basic common sense to me would say you would either need to sell it or lease it to the state that has the capabilities of operating it and maintaining it for the environmental aspect and the off-roading aspect. And I wasn't going to say anything about the former presenters here, but I invite any of you to please contact me. You can contact me at 481-0355 at the rental shop. My cell phone number is 440-6838. I'd be more than happy to take you out there one-on-one or as a group, as a private citizen, and show you. It's a family-ran park. Families are out there to enjoy themselves and enjoy one another's time. It's one of the only places left in the South County that kids actually have a place to go do something, have a bonfire on the beach and enjoy themselves. As far as the dust and whatnot, go look at it. It's an unprotected area. The wind blows very hard down there. It's blowing right now. I spent 2 hours down there this morning, and the vehicles are not causing all this horrible environmental impact that these people are saying. It's bold-faced lies. And please just look at the facts, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Angelo. Jerry Bedell, followed by Ann Steele.
My name is Jerry Bedell, and I'm from Avila Beach, and I have a very short but sweet DVD. If you could start it now, please.
This was the dunes as seen by Edward Weston in the 1930s, a place of tranquility, contemplation, and beauty. This black and white photograph is entitled Nude on Sand, Oceano, 1936. It's a photo of his wife, Cherise, and sold just last week at the New York auction house Sotheby's for a record $325,000, one of the most expensive photos ever sold. Currently, the dunes are dominated by exhaust, explosions, expletives, exploitation, and exhaustion of the environment. Small collection of dune photographs sold for $1.5 million. The proposed sale of county lands, 584 acres, to sell for just $4.8 million? Does this make any sense? Any logical sense to anyone?
Another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust. And another one gone, and another one gone, another one.
New York, London, Paris. Photographs of our dunes have been exhibited in these cultural centers of the world. What do we want our legacy to be? Pictures are worth 1,000 words, and occasionally $1.5 million.
Thank you, Ms. Bedell. Ann Steele, followed by Dave Cross.
This was the dunes as seen by Edward Weston in the 1930s, a place of
Good morning. I'm Ann Steele, and I'm a resident of Arroyo Grande. And I'm passing out breathing masks. And why would anybody want a breathing mask? We've been told that this is a family event down on the beach, that it's absurd. We're telling fibs of some kind, us safe beach and dune people. We're making things up. And one of the things that I'm here to do is contradict some of these things. My little material here says no. Good afternoon, members of the board and community and those at home. There seems to be a lot of misconceptions about just what we're dealing with here on the dunes. It's just sand. No big deal. But there has been some research. Something is breaking the dune crust. This allows sand to blow. The Air Pollution Control District has testified that dust is a problem, and they're studying it. And 2009 will have a report. The numbers they use are like 134 parts per million. The sizes are PM10, PM1.5, PM2.5. This refers to the actual size of the material. As Charles Carroll on the television would say, this is the rest of the story. The government has been given responsibility to safeguard our health. The Department of Health Services, under the Agency of Public Health and Center for Disease Control, and a little umbrella organization called the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, have done some research on our little sands. These agencies study sand in all of its sizes and what it does to the human body. That's their job. This is not fabrication. This is not creativity, as the gentleman before me said. These are agencies that are paid for by our tax monies. They do this every day, year in and year out. And what I'm about to do is I'm about to give you material safety data sheets from different ages. And as the research on sand, or silica dust as it's referred to, it has a CAST number, and that's one of the things that I'm here to talk about. This CAST number has a significant effect. You can look it up on the internet. CAST number 14808-60-7. Silica is a solid, it says. Its size is what we're concerned about. Its size can be blown in the air. Its size is not visible. Its size is only felt. Its size goes in the body. It goes on the body. And that's where the danger is.
Thank you, Ms. Steele. Your time is up.
For COPD, genetic, mutagenic,
your time,
and cancer.
Your time is up. Thank you. Dave Cross, followed by Eric Greeney.
Yeah, thank you for taking time to hear from me. First, let me introduce myself. My name is Dave Krause. I am the CEO and owner of Yo Banana Boy, Inc., which is a business that works out on the beach, one of, I think, about 10 concessions out there. First, I'd like to tell you that we are located right here in San Luis County. We do have a business license in San Luis County. We work outside of the beach as well. We provide some of our services outside. I also own property in Oceano, in the city of Oceano. So understand that your decision, it directly affects me, my family, it affects my employees, it affects the State Department of Parks, of course, and it affects our local community. Now, I'll tell you, we are not the biggest business out on the beach, and we're not the biggest business here in the county, okay? But we are a vital, important part of our community. And much of the money that we make, it does go directly back into our local community. Last year, we grossed about $500,000 in gross sales. Now, of that, I want to tell you, $32,000 went directly back to local businesses that I bought products from to resell, okay? Last year, my automobile expense, I know you guys are going to relate to this, gas alone, over $30,000 I spent in gas just from our gas stations here locally. We had over $30,000 in automotive repair bills. The beach is rough on our equipment. So I spent over $60,000 locally on automobile repair items. We had contributions to local charities around here of over $900. Other local businesses that we do business with are things like our printers, Office Max, Walmart, tool rental companies, laundromats, medical offices, equipment repairs, other supply shops, local restaurants, and other entertainment venues, we spent over $58,000. And our most important expense of all last year was my employees. I have three full-time, full year-round salaried employees that all live locally. These gentlemen all build their lives around our business, and they're building their families' lives around our business. Rich has been with me for over 5 years, Pat for over three, and Carmen for over two. These are guys who plan on being around for a while. We also hire many seasonal workers as the busy season gets longer, gets busy. Last year, my payroll expense was over $80,000. Okay? We also collect state sales tax, which part of that money goes directly back to our community. What all these numbers mean? It's real simple. We're just a financially viable part of this community. I do have a lot of ideas to expand my business, but at this time, without a long-term contract with the state, I'm kind of on a hold. And so I urge you to please approve the sale of this land to the state so that we can grow our business and continue to be a viable part of this community.
Thank you, Mr. Krause. Eric Greeney.
I am Eric Greeney.
Followed by Peter Joseph Thomas.
Yes, I am Eric Greening, and we do often hear this particular use of the dunes as being an economic plus. Given the information that Larry Allen was giving on which you can visit at this safebeachanddunes.org website, one question that needs to be asked is, what would be the financial impact on the business community if the Napomo area fell out of air quality attainment? Usually it's the business community that gets penalized first because it's easier to control stationary sources than mobile sources, but it may be that road funding would also be endangered by such a designation. Transit actually might be sitting pretty. This might finally get us our congestion mitigation air quality funding, but I don't think we should get it that way. Anyway, what I would ask you to do, given that the current agreement does not expire until June 20th, is to continue any decision until June 10th and set aside some time. In the meantime, you have a different hat that you wear. You are directors of the Air Pollution Control District. It is, even though you won't have the final results of the ongoing study, I think it is essential before you extend any operating agreement on the dunes that you agendize this as APC directors and get the best advice of your executive director and the technical experts as to what, on an interim basis, before the study is completed, what conditions you should impose to be sure that this county-owned land does not kick the Napomo Mesa into air quality non-attainment. Because, again, the economic, I'm not even talking about environmental impacts. You're used to me up here talking about environmental impacts. The economic impacts of non-attainment have not been discussed here, but they could be quite severe on our local businesses and on our local economy. Of course, with the 30 seconds left, there's a lot I could say about environmental impacts, and I want to continue to call to your attention the use of Arroyo Grande Creek mouth, which was contemplated for discontinuance in the 1980s, you know, the alternative access study was supposed to happen shortly after 1982. It is continuing now, essentially driving through a stream in Tidewater Gobi habitat is still the access to this place, and you're responsible for that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Peter Joseph Thomas, followed by Bruce Van Vliet.
I wear this because sometimes I spit when I flow. I do not believe there should be a 2-year extension on the dunes, and I do not believe it should be sold to the state. I walk from the entrance on the end of Grand Avenue in Grover Beach, the city that I live in, all the way up to Guadalupe and back on a monthly basis. And when I get there, I'm greeted by many sapiens from out of town that believe they own the world, or at least this part of ours. Huge trucks running to keep their CD players playing while they listen to their ballin' car stereo in order to impress the ladies, but also to spew amounts of smog that I couldn't even imagine our flying reptilian friends ever could. Some of them get really drunk and gawk and verbally abuse me as I make my annual walk, but I brush it off, for in the end, they are only destroying and disgracing the self and their mother. In my travels, I find beer cans, plastic ringlets, cigarette butts, discarded captain chairs, plastic bags stuck in bushes. Sometimes, the tourists that come to town are a real detriment to my beautiful community. Not all, mind you, but the ones that believe that they can use this beautiful coast for a gigantic party where they can have minors drink, harass other visitors, and leave all their trash behind. Let good friends of mine named Paige Dale burn in bonfires and be oblivious to the fact until minutes later. A friend that was young and drunk, teetering, tottering, obviously blacked out by every sense of the word, and not make sure that she stay clear of a huge burning fire. She was only 18 with a group of plenty of overage men and women. In their inebrial mire, they let her slip in as well and were too intoxicated to even watch over her. Where were the park rangers when this was going on, I might ask? Bonfires are not parties, they are celebrations, and getting wasted is never a celebration. It's one slip back into that hole that goes deeper and deeper the more and more you drink. In the off-season, this is what the community uses this coast for, and it's causing dire consequences. I know that you believe it is essential for the economy of our society, but the longer you keep the dunes so open and so unsupervised, the more evil things happen to the natural and biological entities within our community.
Peter, state your name for the record, please.
Peter Joseph Toman.
Thank you. Bruce Van Voort.
Good afternoon.
Followed by, let's see, no name, Larry, Pacific Adventure Tours. Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Bruce. My name is Bruce Van Voort. I own Finn's Restaurant and Pismo Beach Golf Course through a lease, concessionaire lease to the state of California. I've seen many operations around this country. I was recently the general manager in charge of operations through a contract with the National Park Service at Mount Rushmore. So I understand the balance between the environmental impact and businesses. The one thing I've noticed about the Department of Parks, State of California, State Parks, they do a world-class job at that facility. I've been there for 6 years. I don't see the carnival that everybody's talking about. I see a well-organized, well-run, environmentally sensitive operation. I match those against operations that I consult for, which is Mount Rushmore, Yellowstone, Grand Canyon. They do a phenomenal job. Whenever we have a problem, the rangers are there within minutes. If there's medical emergencies, they're there within minutes. There are the occasional yahoos, which every community has, that none of us like to see, that are part of the park. And the Park Service deals with that in a professional manner. The one thing I have seen over the years is I've seen county parks, city parks, state parks, and National Park Service parks. The state parks in the state of California and the national parks do a far superior job than any other entity I've seen in this country, including in this state. And that's a tribute to Andy Zolke and his family and his staff, excuse me. My little operation generates over $500,000 in payroll. We have 50 employees who rely on that operation. A lot of that comes from tourists, comes from families. If you shut down the parks, what do you do with the children? What do you do with the physically handicapped and challenged people who put their feet in the water because they can drive down to those parks? Do we just discard them? Knock out the roads? I don't think so. I don't believe that. And I don't believe you believe that. There is no better organization to run the entire park than state parks. They have a balanced environmental study going on. They have environmental people who train us all the time. They do a phenomenal job. I'd like you to give them the sale of the property. They can best manage it. The liability could be unbelievable for the county. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Van Voort. Next speaker, I can't read the last name. It's Larry of Pacific Adventure Tour. And followed by Susan, it looks like Testa. And Larry, I just want to remind all of you again that today we are not making a decision about whether or not to sell the park. We're making a decision about extending the current operating agreement with state parks as we continue our negotiations. So just a reminder there.
And, okay. And if I might, Mr. Chairman, the question, should it come to a question of sale of this particular piece of county land or the creation of a lease or other disposition, that would be a separate public hearing that would be noticed and conducted in a similar fashion.
And your last name again, please?
My last name is Haas, H-A-A-S.
Okay, thank you.
First name, Larry.
Got it.
Company Pacific Adventure Tours and Extreme Hummers. I've been an operator out in the Oceano Dunes for the last 9 years. I have 6,000 people a year that ride my Hummers out in the Oceano Dunes. All these people have rode out there safely. We've never had one injury in the 9 years that I've been operating out there with the Hummers. My business cannot grow unless we have a long-term contract. My business has grown every single year since I've been out in the Oceano Dunes. But now I've started looking elsewhere because I don't know if I'll have a viable company. I cannot sell my company right now. It is absolutely worth nothing. Because I do not have a long-term contract. And I think it would be wise for the Board of Supervisors to sell to the state of California and put that money into a trust into their existing state parks, Santa Margarita, Lake Lopez, Coastal Dunes RV, and I know all these parks are short of funds. And the money that would be derived from the sale to the state could go into a trust for the existing county state parks. The people that come and ride the Hummers come from all over the world. I have 10 buses that come in from New York every year with 500 kids from Long Island and Manhattan, New York, to ride the buses, to ride the Hummers. They all go back every year and tell their families, and more people come to visit San Luis Obispo County and make it their destination. The film industry, I am hired by the state to take people out to scout the dunes. I'm a member of the film commission, and I can tell you right now, the movie Hidalgo, Pirates of the Caribbean, Tears of the Sun would have not been filmed here if we would not have had the access to those dunes. We picked up Walt Disney Studios in the Hummers at the Santa Maria Airport and took them out here, scouted the locations for them, and they were trying to decide between the Oceano Dunes, Las Vegas, and Texas. And due to the fact that one of my suggestions was this would be the best location for them for the lodging of their people and access to the Burbank studios, they decided to shoot the films out here.
Okay, thank you. Your time is up. Susan, it looks like Testa.
Yes.
Followed by Scott Milstead.
Okay, my name is Susan Testa, and because of what you said, I'll skip a lot of what I was going to say, but I would like to address one of the concerns of one of the persons who keeps saying this over and over. According to the 2006 Condor Environmental Alternative Access Study, there is no threat to the Tidal Gulf, Tidewater goby. A few people keep saying the Tidewater goby is threatened, but according to the biologists involved in the Condor study, the usually dry creek crossing is not a natural habitat for the Tidewater goby. They do not and never will live there in that part of the creek. So I just want to relieve your worries there. And then I'll skip past the last issue I'd like to talk about is the economic impact that the OHV visitors have on our area. Local businesses are having a tough time making it during this recession. Sales are down. We depend highly on the state to maintain the park and to bring in visitors with their money to spend in our towns. The state spends a huge amount on maintaining this area. How can you expect the state to put more money into anything so uncertain as a short-term lease? It's not wise nor fair to expect them to put money into improvements on a piece of property that they may not have more than 1 to 5 years. I have mentioned ecotourism, or a few have mentioned ecotourism. Please look at the revenue generated by the ecotourism further down the coast. It hasn't done much for Guadalupe. Unfortunately, not that many people are interested in going on one of Bill's guided tours. The state's offer may seem low, but remember, the maintenance and liability is high. Look at what Schwarzenegger's doing to our other parks because of lack of funding. The county is not in great financial condition. Don't blow it by blowing this deal. Either sell the dunes to the state or give them a very long-term lease. I don't understand what giving them a short-term lease, there's going to be no motivation for them to keep up the park or to do maintenance on it. I wouldn't if I was renting a house. Why would I want to paint the house if the place, they're going to take it away in a year? Also, wasn't going to say this, but the sand, I keep hearing this issue being addressed. I think people need to find out why sand dunes are formed and how they're formed. It's because of wind blowing sand. That's what makes the dunes in the first place. There was a very extensive study, and I can't remember, I didn't look it up before I came, who did it, and it was inconclusive as to if the sand particles were caused by the cars. So that issue should be moot right now. And I'm glad to see you looking so good, Mr. Gibson. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Scott Milstead, followed by Ross Curry.
Hi, my name is Scott Milstead. I have a business in Pismo Beach. Any guesses? I'm here as a business owner, and I'd just like to say that I appreciate the positive economic gain recognized by the county support of the recreational vehicle use on the dunes. And I hope that you do extend the lease and that ultimately you do sell to the state. Contrary to what has been said here, visitors to the dunes do bring lots of money. It's just a great family activity for these guys out there. And I do acknowledge, you know, the right of others to say that there isn't a significant economic impact. I know that you supervisors know better than that. Yes. The influence is felt at grocery stores, our outlet malls, shopping centers, restaurants, the hotels, motels. It adds up to a huge benefit to our community. So I encourage you to extend the lease and ultimately sell the property. Thanks very much.
Hold up, please. Scott, Supervisor Linthal has a question for you.
Yes.
Mr. Milstead, could you say about what percentage or portion of your business you think is related to the dunes or the people that visit the dunes, either the OHVs or off-road vehicle type people?
I could give you a good estimate that in summertime related to dunes and dune visitors that we're talking 25% of my business. You know, thank you.
Ross Curry, followed by Rebecca McMurray.
Good afternoon. My name is Ross Curry. I own Splash Cafe in Pismo Beach, California. I'm not a big user of the dunes. Matter of fact, I took my first ride on the dunes just a couple of months ago in one of the Hummers. Found it extremely exciting, a little terrifying actually, but enjoyable. I'm here just to speak because I've heard comments made that the economic impact of the dunes is negligible. In my 17 years experience in Splash Cafe, I do not find that. On just about any given day, there's people in my restaurant from the dunes. They're either camping there, going there, or coming from there. And The reason I can usually tell is because they're wearing armor. You know, the knees or the jackets or the pads or something, which to me, you know, shows they're being fairly responsible trying to save their limbs. That's really all I wanted to say. I have, for 17 years, they are customers. They do have an impact on Pismo Beach. I do see their off-road vehicles all over town daily. Thank you.
Mr. Curry, Supervisor Lenthal.
I'd just like to ask you the same question. Could you estimate what percentage of your business you think is related to the dunes of that activity?
You know, I would hate to make just an offhand calculation because we are very busy. A lot of valley tourists come through our place. But I do have to say that on any given time on a weekend, you can go in there and find off-roaders. I just see them constantly. I don't think they're 20% or you know, but I do believe that they're a big impact on our town, and they are in there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Curry. Rebecca McMurray, followed by Randy. You're going to have to help me with this. Looks like a Sonda, S-O-N-D-A.
J-O-R-D-A.
Okay. Oh, all right.
Good afternoon, Supervisors. Rebecca McMurray. I'm the CEO of the Pismo Beach Chamber of Commerce. The Pismo Beach Chamber of Commerce supports the current use of the Oceano Dunes SVRA as a premier camping and off-roading recreation park operated by California State Parks. The Oceano Dunes SVRA is a well-known and popular tourist attraction in San Luis Obispo County. The park hosts nearly 2 million visitors annually and generates millions and millions of dollars in revenue for South County businesses. Many businesses in Pismo Beach, Grover Beach, Arroyo Grande, and Oceano are dependent on income received from these park users. On behalf of the membership of the Chamber, the Board of Directors has taken the following position regarding the Oceano Dunes SVRA. It is the position of the Pismo Beach Chamber of Commerce that the current use of the Oceano Dunes SVRA remain as it is today, a camping and off-roading destination, and that it not be further encumbered by additional closures of space or restriction of use within the current boundaries of the park. We thank you for your time on this issue today.
Thank you, Ms. McMurray. Randy? Followed by Robert Houston.
My name is Randy Jordan. I am the president of Sun Buggy Fun Rentals, a dune buggy rental business at the beach, as well as a dune enthusiast. And we account for about 1% of that $100 million. Unfortunately, I think we spend it all here. There are very few family activities left, as was stated by the nice lady who spoke earlier on that side, where the whole family participates. This is one of them. You know, our entire economy in the United States, we now import more than we export, which is having a diabolical effect on us. The money that's spent here at the dunes does stay here in the United States. It's a shame for us to convert the people that have recreational activities here to some other activity that will export the money from here. When you ask these business owners how many of their customers are dunes related, you should also ask them how many of their customers are people who support the people that use the dunes. Mechanics, gas stations, the guy that makes ice. I mean, those people also go to the restaurants. My daughter just had her 15th birthday on the dunes last Friday. Bonfire, nobody got burned. It's all a question of responsible use. You know, sorry to hear that other young lady fell in the fire, but I don't think it was the dunes' fault. I also run an operation in Las Vegas where I see the BLM there. It has one part-time ranger on 15,000 acres. This is utopia as far as operational supervision by the Parks Department, comparatively speaking. If you fall down and get hurt in Nevada and no one's there to find you, that's just how it is. Here, they're all over you with sirens and ambulances. You know, it's a totally different thing. I found it very interesting, the position with regards to the sand dust. Environmental forces have brought that forward on dune use all over the country. That's a new approach to project what may be found out later to be a problem, but that we don't know of currently. I previously made my living abating asbestos and mold, so I have a little bit of knowledge on that. And nationally, I think it's been concluded that there's more harmful dust generated from construction sites, dump trucks bringing it off a wetted site onto pavement where it dries, because the pavement's dark and hot, and then the cars bring it up into the air. So if you're going to do a dust study like you have monitors out in the dunes, put some over by the agricultural areas where those tractors drive across the street and that dust comes up in the air, and then you'll get a fair reflection of where it really comes from. Let's see. I don't think that sign that was displayed earlier as a current reflection of the dunes is a current reflection of everybody's position of the dunes, and I don't think it exists anymore. I would appreciate it if you would extend the current lease with the Parks Department and ultimately sell it to the state. I think it's in everyone's best interest. I don't see, unless the county wants to work some revolving deal where you get annual income, I don't see where it's in the county's interest to do any other way with it. I mean, I don't think you're going to subdivide it and build on it.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan.
Time's up.
Time's up. Robert Houston, followed by Zachary Zeman.
My name is Robert Houston. I work with BJ's 18-year-olds. I've been there for about 10 years. I want to say that I've seen thousands and thousands of families come here. You know, little kids 5 years old, all the way up to people maybe on their 60th anniversary. They might be 85 years old, and they go out in the dunes. We've got thousands and thousands of people who respect it. The rangers do a great job out there respecting and keeping it all safe for everyone. I think it'd be a shame to close down such a wonderful thing. I lived in LA Valley for about 20 years and didn't realize how beautiful this was. I'd visited many times, but had no idea how cool the dunes were and how many families were brought together by the dunes. And I appreciate you guys really thinking about keeping this park open. I've had a job here for 10 years, just about. I own a home in Grover Beach. I'd like to be able to keep it, and I'd like to keep this job. It's a wonderful place to be and place to visit. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Zachary Zeman, followed by Christine Zeman.
Hi, my name is Zachary Zeman. I also work for BJ's ATV Rentals. I was born and raised in the South County. I've had experiences my entire life out in those dunes. I've seen them since I was a very tiny kid. I mean, really, honestly tiny. So you know, I love them. I love working near them. I love being involved with them. I think it's a fantastic place to be. I see families every day. Many families from all over the world. They come here, and a lot of times they'll leave our place and they'll head up to Hearst Castle. It's part of a major attraction on this area. It has a huge impact financially and just socially. I think it has a major impact on the area. I would strongly support any kind of extension, any kind of sale. I think you guys should seriously consider selling. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zeman. Christine Zeman, followed by Diana Perez.
I also work at BJ's ATV Rentals. I would just like to say that I see a lot of people...
Speak up just a little bit, please, Christine.
Sure. Is that better?
It's better.
No?
Yeah,
can you hear me? No? Okay. I would just like to say that I work at BJ's ATV Rentals. My name, again, is Christine Zeman. I deal with people every day that come from all over to come do this activity. And all I really want to say is I'd hate to see it close. There's a lot of families from everywhere that come. And it can be safe and it can be enjoyable. Thank you.
Thank you. Diana Perez. Diana, are you here? I guess not. Patty Duran, followed by Dave Thompson.
I have a DVD that I film, so. My name is Patty Duran. I'm a resident of Napomo. I heard about this air pollution issue at a recent meeting of the South County Advisory Group. We had Larry Allen come and speak from the Air Pollution Control Board. The video you are watching is filmed by myself and a friend. Same time, same day, two different locations. One on a very windy day, one in Guadalupe, the other in Grover Beach, overlooking the Napomo Mesa Oceano area. You will see the difference in visibility, and you can see the plume. What is the plume? The plume is a cloud of silt that travels over 12-plus miles through Napomo Mesa carrying high PM10, silt particles that are a health hazard to the Napomo residents. What is PM10? It consists of very small liquid and solid particles floating in the air. Where do they come from? The dunes have three layers, sand, crust, and silt. The sand is heavy and cannot blow more than 18 inches in the air. It keeps the crust intact. The crust is made of moss algae, cryptobiotic vegetation. Plant life cannot flourish in the dunes without this crust. Then you have a silt layer. When you drive over the dunes, the crust gets pulverized. The silt underneath and the pulverized crust floats into the air, forming PM10 debris. Scorecard.com is a pollution information site which I was looking at yesterday because I was trying to identify the health risks associated with PM10. In Napomo, particulate matter study has recently been conducted, showing that on the Napomo Mesa, exceedances of the 24-hour PM10 standard were measured on over one quarter of the sample days. According to the pollution information site I was looking at, among the human health effects associated with PM10 concentration are mortality risk, chronic bronchitis risk, respiratory hospital admissions, asthma symptom days, restricted activities, days with acute respiratory symptoms, children with bronchitis. For example, on May 9th of 2004, the PM10 was 100 times more than California clean air standards allows. 100 milligram cubic micron incidence in children with bronchitis means that 16 out of 1,000 children will experience bronchitis. So let's say that 5,000 children live in Napomo. 80 of them will experience bronchitis. The data from the study clearly demonstrates that the highest PM10 concentrations measured on the Mesa are largely due to wind-driven crustal material from the upwind dune area. The Napomo residents of the Mesa are becoming aware of this, and so is the Trilogy residents. I've seen several people in this million-dollar golf complex sell their home because of this PM10 situation. I'm requesting that the county take action on this matter. Napomo is being taxed also to clean up their air.
Thank you, Ms. Duran. Dave Thompson. And after Dave speaks, we still have about a half an hour of testimony here for public comment. I'd like to take a five-minute break. Mr. Thompson. Actually, if you roll up next to the dais there, that's the microphone's right there.
On the record.
So. Oh, on the record.
Closer yeah. Out here, the
best. The Lompoc record?
County record.
There you go. That works. State your name for the record, please.
I'm Dave Thompson from Santa Maria. I grew up in Lompoc in 1954. I was fortunate enough to enter the ninth grade. And we started building a dune buggy in high school, 10th. In about the 11th grade, we had finished it out of exhaust pipe and drive shafts, and we welded together to put old Hudson horns in the thing and took it to Oceano Dunes.
Excuse me, let me interrupt. They can't pick you up on the recording, so you need to be right there by the mic. And if you, okay, very good.
Or give them a hand mic, it makes it better.
Now I'm disabled, and my form of recreation is probably 50 times a year to drive from Santa Maria to the Oceano Dunes and enjoy and watch the people and enjoy the dunes in my four-wheel drive pickup. That is just a nice, stock piece of equipment, and that's my form of recreation. And I have no qualms with people that don't think the air quality is good enough in this country, but our Creator gives us air quality that we have, and I drove through the most horrendous windstorm crossing the Santa Maria River that's natural, blown from the wind. Ah, where'd the wind come from? Let's curse God and tell him to get rid of the wind that blows his sand around, and he's got the control of things. It's time that we need to recognize that he's got it in control instead of us humans trying to clear the wind and the air quality control districts. How do you even think you could control air quality from trillions of cubic miles of air blows in off this Pacific Ocean, cleansed by the now we're going to gripe because it has picked up some particulates.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. I'd like to take a break until 3:50. We'll reconvene at 3:50. Please take your seats and we'll reconvene the meeting. Jack, please. Take your seat.
Separation, or you have to have a pressure-treated piece of wood below. That's what the code says.
So even as a concrete.
Take your seat, and we'll reconvene the meeting.
Okay, you should be on. You should be on.
Okay. Take your seats, please. Thank you. We'll continue with public comment. Our next speaker, Michael Wynn, followed by Babak Nafasi.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mike Wynn. I live in Napomo, downwind from the Oceano Dunes. I want to say just a couple things to you today that are perhaps not exactly the sort of things that others may choose to say. One, I do want to remind you that the Napomo Mesa is assessed an impact fee by the Air Quality Control Board for the kind of particulate matter that's coming off the dunes onto us. We know that part of that is just in the nature of a dune system. It's an act of God. It certainly isn't something man-made. But the problem is exacerbated by vehicular traffic on the dunes breaking down the crust. And so I would ask that you think about that. Either the countywide should have such an impact fee for dust that is stirred up, or those impacts should be spread over to the man-made causes that we can actually identify, which is RVs. Secondly, and last, I don't think you have good choices before you today, but I do understand the agendized decision that you're facing. And I do think that you would be wise to extend the contract for a certain period of time. But what I would urge you to do is begin today also the process of looking long-term at where the county's true interests lie here. I think that the increased liability of death and injuries on the site, the environmental effects that will continue on and need to be mitigated, plus the liability for the violations of certain environmental codes which will come before you, outweigh the benefit that you will have. What we need is a creative transition from the kinds of businesses we have now, which are providing income for families that need it, to other businesses, other types of businesses that we more environmentally friendly. And I would urge us to think a strategy for making a transition over time, say maybe 5 years, something that's doable, so that nobody's taken by surprise and no one has their livelihood cut off shortly. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. Babak Nafasi, followed by Kevin Rice.
Good afternoon. My name is Babak Nafasi, and I'm an environmental attorney. I represent the Sierra Club. I have two sets of comments, one, some substantive and some procedural. First, I want to urge you to consider that you can't legally, consistent with the general plan, approve the proposal before you today for the same reason that we believe you can't approve a sale, because that action would be inconsistent with the general plan, the LCP, and the Ag and Open Space Policy 30. So for the same reasons, this action is also inconsistent with those policies and the LCP, as you yourselves recognized a year ago. Also, this project is presented to you with an environmental exemption, a CEQA exemption, which we believe violates the law for two reasons. One, because the extension of the lease agreement would be inconsistent with the LCP and the Ag and Open Space, so that is considered an impact on their CEQA, and there is this case of City of Santa Clara versus LAFCO, 139 Calab 3rd, 923, which basically decided that you can't have an exemption if there is a conflict. Also, the environmental impacts of leasing this county property to state parks was never analyzed, particularly the air impact you've heard so much about. And for that reason as well, you can't approve this with an exemption because the environmental impacts have not been adequately considered before and should be considered now. Now, my process concerns are, I think, very serious. What you heard here from the staff and what you heard what you read in the report is essentially the staff arguing and presenting the position of state parks who have not made their own presentation. A lot of these claims that the county staff has presented to you as state parks demands this, state parks says this, state parks will threaten us with the other thing. There's no analysis of whether the state parks has any legitimate right to actually bring these up. Can we switch, please? I want to also point out to you this document, which you're probably familiar with. This is your South Coast Area Planning Area Standards. This is Standard 9, where it reads, ORV shall be permitted only in identified unfenced vehicular areas. These areas are identified in Figure 4. Twice in previous staff reports, that same standard has been reported without the reference to Figure 4. Now, in both in January 25th, 07 staff report and the December one, the December of 06 report, there was no reference to Figure 4, and there was a conclusion that here you've heard that Figure 4 was irrelevant, was erroneously included, and there's no reference to it.
Thank you.
I wish I could finish, but thank you.
Okay. Kevin Rice, followed by Andrew Christie.
Kevin Rice, resident of San Luis Obispo. I'm just giving you some literature you might thumb through. It's got a few things highlighted for you. Specific interest, though, on the last page is the 2006 USGS Shoreline Report, and I'll just quote that one highlight. It has been estimated that about 150,000 cubic meters of sand are blown inland each year along the stretch of coastline from Pismo Beach to Point Arguello. That's about 250,000 pounds of sand without the help of OHVs. I've got so much I want to say here, so I just got to hurry. La Grande Beach is, I'm looking at it like a hot potato right now. You've got, everybody wants a part of the potato, but nobody wants to be holding the potato. The person that holds the potato is responsible for the liability, the law enforcement, the management. Who in the county is going to do the plover report next year if the lease expires? Who's going to do traffic, criminal? Who's going to maintain the fencing? So we want to pass off this hot potato. State Parks has been gracious enough to spend all the money to take care of that property, about half the price of, I believe, what the county would take to do it, because they're a lot better set up for it. But now the county wants money, $1 per vehicle at the gate. They want revenue. Well, I don't lease my house from my landlord, and then he expects me to paint and pay the property tax. So right now I think the county's getting a great deal. They're getting that liability off their hands. If you want to look for revenue, here's your revenue. These people right here are your revenue. We've got state parks which can't write contracts to new people, which I know are lined up to get new businesses down there. We can't extend contracts. I think this two-year extension in essence, is a bad deal. I'm for an extension so we can work something out. But a two-year extension is just putting these businesses on a string. Nobody wants to invest in a business where they don't know where it's going to be at in 2 years. We need a short-term extension and then get on with it. You all know that we want a sale. It's the best thing for the county. Everybody says the sky is falling and it's illegal out there. So take the $4.8 million before it dries up, because once we know it's illegal, we're not going to want it. With the time I have left, I've got 3,665 other people besides me standing here today. All these people want you to sell La Grande, and they support our Oceana Dunes Park. And because I'm an environmentalist, I burned you a copy on CD instead of paper. I hope you'll consider these signatures. They're from all over the world. And at $72 a head, like this report says, this is $250,000 of tourism right here. And this is only about a 500th of what shows up at the dunes every year. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Ross. Andrew Christie, followed by Tony, it looks like.
Spinelli.
Spinelli. Thank you, Jerry.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and Honorable Supervisors. I am Andrew Christie. I am Chapter Director for the Sierra Club in San Luis Obispo County. And just a quick update to your staff report, we filed suit yesterday against state parks to compel them to conform with the local coastal plan. Directing your attention to the history of planning issues presented on pages 3 and 4 of your staff report, the staff report maintains that Figure 4 in the county's certified local coastal plan designating the La Grande Tract as a buffer area off limits to off-road vehicles is essentially a mistake, going so far as to say, quote, the Figure 4 map would have made sense if the Coastal Commission had approved the county's draft plan in its submitted form, end quote, and that after the land use plan was revised and certified in 1984, quote, although the buffer map appeared in the final version of the local coastal plan, it now conflicted with the text of the local coastal plan, end quote. But what the Coastal Commission actually said in 1982 was that the county's intention to create a permanent staging area at Oso Flaco raised significant issues concerning protection of sensitive habitat, and the proposed closure of the entire park unit until that happened would not be in conformity with the Coastal Act's mandate to assure coastal access. For those reasons, the Commission rejected the 1982 draft, not because it disagreed with the buffer designation for the county's land. Far from objecting to the designation of county land in the SVRA as a buffer, Coastal Commission staff explicitly endorsed it and affirmed that the clear intent in our LCP, as certified by the Coastal Commission in 1988, we do not see the alleged conflict between the text of the LCP and the buffer designation in Figure 4. Where does the LCP state the county land is not to be designated as a buffer between the Dunes Preserve and the OHV area? How does staff substantiate its assertion that the inclusion of Figure 4 in the certified LCP conflicts with the text when, in fact, Figure 4 is explicitly referenced in South County Area Plan Policy 9 of the LCP? The job of your staff is to serve the county board and the public, not real estate acquisition strategies by the California Department of Parks and Recreation's Off-Highway Vehicles Division. If they cannot do that, county staff should be recused in this matter and an independent consultant hired to do an independent review of the legal and factual issues before you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Christie. Tony Spinelli, followed by Larry Broth.
Good afternoon. My name is Tony Spinelli, and I've been self-employed within the South County of Pismo Beach for the past 37 years. As an individual that has spent most of my adult life here in the hospitality business and is currently the owner of Beach Bum Holiday Rentals, a vacation rental company located in downtown Pismo, I think I'm pretty well versed in talking to you about the positive influence the Pismo State Beach means to this community as a whole. From a business standpoint, the approximately 2 million visitors that visit our beach annually spend not only time enjoying themselves in our little slice of heaven, but also leave their hard-earned money within our community. Let me give you a few examples. Just this morning, I ran into Albertsons located in Roy Grande Walmart Shopping Center and had a conversation with my brother-in-law, who has been the meat manager there for quite a number of years. He made some interesting comments on how that store is one of the largest volume stores in the area, and his reasoning was that the vacationers stop in to stock up their groceries prior to, during, and during their stay on the beach. My vacation rental business sees numerous visitors that rent homes, condos, and bring their ATVs to ride on the beach during the day and spend their evenings playing in the surrounding cities, contributing financially to the economic and vitality of this community. The state is not only the one biggest employer in the South County. They also have the concessionaires that work the beach, and those of us who employ the numbers that we hire. Just as with the example of Albertson's store, if they weren't able to currently generate the volume in their grocery sales, they would lessen their number of employees. This state beach generates a large amount of tax dollars locally through the numbers of tourists that spend their money and fill the city's coffers with the taxes needed to help maintain all the services required to operate our local government in a safe and clean environment, at the same time making all our locally owned and operated businesses financially stable. During the early years, I watched how this county tried to run the state beach. Quite frankly, it was a disaster. We had tow truck owners having fist fights trying to mark their territories, literally doing donuts in the sand, guaranteeing them a large paycheck to tow the poor driver that got his car stuck out from this sunken demise and tow truck drivers had created. Enforcement was non-existent and trash cleanup was at will. In the early 1980s, when the county's decision was to award the state a contract to maintain the beach, that was the best thing that happened to this community. The county had created a cooperative partnership with the state who had ran their operation in a professional, financially stable manner and fulfilled any requests from government agencies as well as individuals' concerns, and being great stewards of our beach.
Thank you, Mr. Spinelli.
Thank you.
Time is up. I appreciate it. Larry Broth, followed by Lucia Castellan-Uvo. You may have to correct that when you get up here, but I'll allow that. Larry Broth.
Well, thank you. I've met with all of you individually, and thank you for giving me your time, and thank you for this hearing. I'm Larry Bross. I have lived as a resident of Oceano on the Strand for the past 20 years. I've owned property there for 40 years. Also want to thank the staff for your history. My history would add a little bit more to it. I'd like to give a little bit of what I've seen there over the past 40 years. To begin with, I think a critical time was in 1982, 1983, when that big storm that knocked down the Pismo Pier. It also knocked down the Oceano ramp. I don't know how many of you remember the old ramp. Well, you have to realize that Oceano is the watershed of the area. There are three streams that empty into the Arroyo Grande. The Los Berros, Meadow Creek, and then the Arroyo Grande Creek. It's the wetlands. And in 82 and 83, the decisions were made to save Oso Flaco, a fertilizer dump, and to sacrifice Oceano, the wetlands of the area. Now, this country is built on compromise. And I, just like Mr. Wynn, I'm asking you to look down the long run, eventually what will happen here. What Oceano needs is a beach, like every other beach community has. And we all know that vehicles and beachgoers do not mix. What the OHV area needs is an area free from the beach. You know, I think a compromise could be made. Can you show that map out there for me, please? If we can get it. Yeah, if you look up at the top of the map, the entrances would be Grand Avenue to the north and Pier Avenue. You know, I'd like you to take the air quality on Pier Avenue on any weekend, Pier Avenue, on any weekend, with those vehicles running, waiting to get onto the beach, and find out what it's like living in Oceano on those weekends. But there are two entrances. There used to be six. We need an all-weather route south of the creek. $200,000 was spent on this document. You know, there's no reason why we couldn't revisit Oso Flaco and look at it as a way in. The heavy equipment, which, you know what has happened over the last 25, it's not like the days when Larry Bross used to run on the beach and his family, you know, rode there too.
Thank you, Mr. Bross. I appreciate it. Time's up. Lucia? And then Steve, looks like Dayton.
Good afternoon. My name is Lucia Casalinuovo. I'm a long-time resident of Oceano. Of course, I came from Italy, but I love Oceano. I work, I pay my taxes, and of course, this is not about the cars on the beach. You said that at the very beginning. That's not what you're here deciding for. And of course, I'm going to talk about that because it is about that. Because, of course, the state wants to buy the land so that it could keep running the cars and the off-road vehicles on it, okay? And, of course, we don't want them to buy the land so that we can keep some local control. So it is about the cars and the off-road vehicles on the dunes. Take the salami slices off your faces. Now, the Pismo Beach Chamber of Commerce, oh, you can't say that that's an unbiased resolution. Or take Grover Beach. Grover Beach makes a lot of money out of our dunes and beach. Pismo Beach makes a lot of money, too. Does Oceano make any money? What about the businesses on Pier Avenue that had to close down? The Italian restaurant, the art shop that was on Pier Avenue, that are run over by the motor vehicles that go to the sands. The fact is that Oceano is a predominantly Hispanic, uneducated, poor community. That's why they're not here to speak. But the white folks from Pismo Beach and the white folks from Grover Beach, they make money and run businesses at our expenses. They're here to talk. But where is the COSO, the Oceano Community Services District, which is against the sale? You know, because I already told you that last year. Where is it? But that's because Oceano, I say it again, it's poor, uneducated, doesn't speak much English, and it's all Hispanic, a lot of migrant workers, a lot of illegal residents. We have no voice. So that's why I have a big voice here right now. I want the Oceano community and the Oceano Beach community to be heard. Because we are paying all the expenses. Now, Pismo Beach lady, she can come down and help us clean the sand from Pier Avenue. She can help us clean the trash off the beach. So you also need to look at all the money that the businesses are not making a big car. It's like being a big bully. The state is being a big bully right now. It's bullying you guys. Get some balls and say that to the state and say, no, you're running us over. You're telling us what to do. Stand for your ideals and for what you believe in. They don't listen to the Coastal Commission. They don't listen to the Coastal Plan. They don't listen to your resolution in the 30s that no cars were to run on our beach. So just tell them to get off.
Thank you, Lucia. Well timed. Steve Dayton.
Wow.
Followed by Michael, it looks like, you know who you are. I can't read the writing.
Tough act to follow.
Steve Dayton.
Hi. My name's Steve Dayton, and I'm going to try to really stay on point. The reason I'm here, the reason I'm speaking, and the point I'm going to make is the two words here that terrorize me about this proposal is the word month-to-month. I'm one of the concessionaires at the state parks. I employ about 30 people in the summertime and about 15. Just recently, I purchased a property in Oceano from one of your constituents, Mr. Patterson. The nice people at Founders Bank actually lent me $800,000 to buy 2.5 acres in Oceano, which I need for my business. What's terrifying is, you know, my first mortgage payment is due here May 1st. And if I was to go back to the bank and say, hey, you know, here's the first payment, but You know, I don't know if you read anything in the paper, but my entire state park's on a month-to-month basis now. I can't help but believe that the bankers don't think about, you know, was that a good loan? Should we have made that loan? But yet I'm the guy, I need it. I got, you know, I've got the financials, I got the backing, this is what we've been doing. But I didn't know this was going to be state parks, or I mean, I didn't know this was going to be a month-to-month proposal when I signed all those loan documents. I also have a general manager coming to work for me next week. And he left a pretty good paying job to come work for me. And, you know, at this point, you know, I need to call him back and say, hey, listen, we still really want you. We're happy you're coming. But there's one small detail I need to let you know about. And that's the fact that this county agreement's going to be on a month-to-month basis and is supposedly got a 24-month time limit. That, I think I owe this guy, and that's what I plan on doing. The only other thing I can say is I'm not real confident the way things are going. It seems like state parks being left outside the gate. The wolves are coming in. Here comes Sierra Club. Every time this comes up, they got 24 months. Here comes the Sierra Club. It's like these guys are outside the yard, and, you know, here comes the wolves. I recently put some money on the Don't Pass line. I'm going to open a second store at the Oregon Dunes. And it's an opportunity for a second operation, another store, another Oregon Dunes Motorsports. But the truth is that if something goes sideways here, I can't lose everything. Right now I have about $2 million in mortgage payments here in the Oceano area, both going to banks here in the local area. All of my people that work for me, five have houses, and I don't know how many kids we have in my company's family. But there's a lot of people relying on me, and I guess there's a lot of people relying on you, and there's a lot of people relying on state parks.
Okay, thank you.
So thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Michael, state your name for the record, please.
I've been asked to bring your attention to three questions by my friend Babak over here, and he wanted to ask you guys. The staff report states that the exact location of lots and streets are not identified. How can the state parks demand access to unmarked lots? He also asks, what's the authority for the proposition that the county must provide unbridled ORV access to these undeveloped lots? And he also asked me to comment that state law requires state parks to fence the riding area. So the county would not be required to put up a fence, he says. Okay, now I want to turn your attention to the issues I wanted to discuss, which is particles in the air in Napomo, which is the town where I come from. I've been doing some research on particles in the air, particles that are smaller than 10 microns in diameter, and I understand that they're correlated with a mortality risk, chronic bronchitis risk, respiratory hospital admissions, cardiac hospital admissions, emergency room visits, asthma symptom days, restricted activity days. I just understand that restricted activity days are days when people can't do everything they want to do because they have breathing problems, days with acute respiratory symptoms, and children with bronchitis. This is from www.scorecard.com, which is a pollution information site that contains this information about particles less than 10 microns in diameter. Now, this exhibit I want to show you is a measurement of the concentration of particles that are less than 10 microns in diameter that are measured in Napomo at CDF. Here you have on May 9th, 2004, a concentration ratio of 150 micrograms per cubic meter. You can also see that the state attainment level for a 24-hour standard is 50 microns, so that's triple the allowable amount of micrograms per cubic meter. Now, according to my analysis and the math I've done, this corresponds to, for example, a 16%, a 0.16% increase in the incidence of children who will have bronchitis. So let's say about 5,000 children live in Nipomo, 80% of them will experience bronchitis as a result of these levels of non-attainment of particulate mass. So my question to you, the Board of Supervisors, is how many people have to die? How many people have to contract bronchitis? How many people have to exhibit asthma symptoms before you decide that the health and safety considerations outweigh the recreational interests of the people who want to ride the off-road vehicles? Thank you for your time.
Thank you. That was my last request to speak, so I'll bring it back to the board. And at this point in time, I want to...
You got one more.
Who else is yours?
Okay.
Is that Ms. Perez?
All right. What's your name? Okay, I don't have a request to speak form, so come on up, and then I'll need you to submit another. But you may speak first. And state your name for the record, please.
My name is Ginger Shank. I'm a homeowner, and I own two businesses, starting a third business in Grover Beach, and I'm vice president of Friends of Oceano Dunes. You should have received a letter yesterday from Friends of Oceano Dunes supporting the sale of the La Grande tract, and that also is for our 30,000 members that we represent. The outspoken minority that is influencing the county to take control of La Grande Tract only have one intention, and that is to close the park. Please do remember that the dunes are 18,000 acres, which only 1,500 acres are still available for OHV. Only 3 miles of beach, in which 6 months out of the year it's only 1.5 miles of beach. This is a very little part of the dunes that we're using for OHV recreation. Over 15,000 acres is closed for the ecotourism. The disabled fishermen, surfers, personal watercraft, equestrians, campers, hikers, tourists, ATVers are all good, honest, hardworking people that deserve a park that they can all coexist in and make lifetime family memories in. The study from Cal Poly revealed that approximately 60 to 70% of the people that visit the dunes have gone to college and that 31% make over $100,000 a year. These are educated people that choose this form of recreation. It also shows that 3,200 full-time jobs are a result of the SVRA. Please make a decision by the end of 2008. How can putting this off for 2 years or 5 years or however long you do a short term benefit any of the businesses in our community? Any of us are afraid to invest in any growth not knowing the fate of the largest tourist attraction on the Central Coast. How many times are we going to keep coming back and going over the same issues? I know a lot of the people in Oceano complain about the sand on the streets. Last week in Guadalupe, they had a bulldozer come in, and at Guadalupe Beach, they bulldozed the road, took the sand off. Within 2.5 days, there was sand on the roads again. It wasn't even really windy out there, and there's no vehicles leaving the pavement. So the sand issues on the streets there, that's going to happen regardless if there's cars or not. So that it's not because of the OHV. On behalf of Friends of Oceana Dunes, I ask you to make a decision that will benefit the local businesses, the local economy, and the 2 million visitors a year that love the SVRA the way it is. We are here today because a handful of people want the beach to themselves, and it's very sad in this day and age that people don't share and respect others anymore. As our elected Board of Supervisors, I beg you, please make a decision to sell to the state. Please do it by the end of this year. We just can't afford to keep dragging out on this. There's too many people here that have too much at stake to just let it go. We really are counting on you to make a decision. So again, please get the $4.8 million that the county needs desperately. Let state parks have all the responsibility and let the county sit back and benefit from the revenue and the jobs that are created from this park. Thank you.
Thank you. So Yes, they're in the back of the chambers. So I'll close public comment at this time and bring it back to the board and ask staff if there's any remarks that they'd like to make regarding the comments from the public. The only thing I have, I think, that I'd like some clarification on, and again, remember that what we're doing is authorizing our General Services Agency Director to extend the current operating agreement while we continue to negotiate with the state, and that operating agreement would be as it currently exists. There would be no modifications to it without having to come back to the board if there were modifications. So keep that in mind. And Mr. Nafisi raised a couple of issues regarding the ability to extend the lease, and I was wondering if Ms. Neal or Mr. McNulty from our county council's office would like to respond to his comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Tim McNulty with the county council's office. Mr. Nafisi's point this morning or this afternoon was that a CEQA exemption generally would not be available in the event that there were general plan inconsistencies with the action that the board wanted to take. And I think that in the resolution that's been prepared, the environmental coordinator has suggested the use of a CEQA exemption that is available where there are no changes in the existing activities that the property is being used for. And that's what has been presented in the staff report and in the resolution for your board's action today. So if you agree that extending the lease is not going to change the activities that the parcels are being used for, then you can use that exemption.
Okay, thank you. The question, too, as part of that is that, in their opinion, the lease or the use isn't legal. That doesn't matter, I guess, in this case, if it's not changing. Is that what?
There isn't any determination that needs to be made today about the application of the policies that have been discussed to this particular lease extension. You don't need to make any determination about whether or not Figure 4 or the OSP 30 policy applies in the event that you're leasing the property.
Okay. Thank you. And I do want to point out that Mr. Andrew Zilke from State Parks is here with staff, and if there are any questions for Mr. Zilke or members of his staff from the board, he is here to answer those questions. So I wanted to point that out. So I see no requests from members of the board.
Mr. Chairman, Gibson? I would offer planning and general services staff any chance to comment on anything that they heard if they felt it was germane to the action questions before us here.
I'd just like to make a comment, Karen Medalina with General Services. I noticed there were some questions, if you will, about, you know, why the 2 years. And simply what we did was extended the lease to coincide with the funding that, so we're kind of trying to run them parallel on the same timeline. And particularly, this agreement that is currently in place does also have a 30-day notice in it. I mean, we are running on a month-to-month. So that was one of the reasons why we thought it would be logical to extend the term of the lease for up to 24 months.
Consistent with the state funding. And
yeah.
Again, I don't know if other colleagues had questions or comments, but I thought I might just comment. Supervisor Lenthal and I were part of the negotiating team with members of General Services, Planning, County Council, and really want to talk to the two items that are agendized today, and one of them is an update. I realize the public has watched for just about exactly a year while we have had this in closed session as a real property negotiation. I would point you to the staff report if you haven't seen it. But in fact, Ms. Van Fleet gave a relatively abbreviated summary of all the issues that have come before us in the course of the last year. And in fact, I would suggest that this is really quite a remarkable staff report and quite an open update in terms of the negotiations that we have underway. In essence, our staff report lays out all the issues that we are negotiating, and I think it would be worth taking just a minute to get to the essence of where we are with our discussions with state parks. Again, it's taken a year, and in that year, our negotiating team has looked at a number of extremely complicated issues of permitting, permit for the operation of the OHV park, issued directly by the Coastal Commission in 1982, in the authority of under what authority is this run as an OHV park, and in the issues of environmental management, which are in fact a rather complex mix of authority between the State Department of Parks and Recreation and the Coastal Commission. So it's taken a while for us to sort through what issues are there that would affect the operation of the park and thus the sale or other disposition of the property that the county owns within it. I think the other thing, again, mentioned in the staff report, but I want to emphasize to the public is that as we have looked at the operation of the OHV and the county's participation as a landowner under an operating agreement right now, we see that there are obvious impacts to the residents and citizens of San Luis Obispo County by the existence of this off-road vehicle park. Now, we hear them, we've heard them, many of them today, we've heard many of them before. Traffic in the area next to the park, sand on the streets, trash on the streets and neighboring areas. The burden on emergency response services of special districts such as the Oceano CSD. And another one that gets talked about, I have come to conclude, and I think our negotiating team has come to conclude, is real. And that is that the operation of this piece of the beach as an OHV park precludes access to a wide segment of the community of San Luis Obispo County by the fact that there are vehicles on the beach. There are certain uses that are just obviously incompatible. Folks wanting to go down to use the beach for more passive uses are precluded by the fact that there are vehicles driving sometimes in a very narrow and congested stretch of the beach. And so it's been our intention, as we consider what to do with the particular property that the county owns as this operating agreement runs out, it to me, as a locally elected official, I'll speak for myself on this, is that as we consider what disposition, whether it be sale, conversion of the operating agreement to the lease, or some other kind of instrument, I think we need to properly compensate the residents and citizens of this county for the impacts that this operation has on them. And to date, in lieu fees were mentioned briefly, to date it's quite clear that the compensation is not satisfactory. So I'll be very frank. The matter of negotiation between the county and state parks right now is to find a way of properly compensating residents of this county for the impacts caused by the OHV park, and we can then decide whether sale or lease or other disposition of this property is the most appropriate way. Our thought is, again, coming right out of closed session here, our thought is that monetary compensation is the most effective, the most direct way in which we can do that. And we look at 1.5 to 2 million visitors. We have made various general proposals to state parks on the matter of securing extra charges based on the overall use of the park, a fee that would come to this county for us to mitigate the impacts, including loss of access, where we might be able to use some of those fees to enhance beach access in other places. In order to make that work, that's going to require state legislative action. And that's the conclusion we've come to, and that's largely the point for which we need more time. We need to be working with our state legislators. We need to be developing the support for the ability to properly compensate this county for the impacts caused by this operation. So that is the reason that we're here contemplating an extension of the operating agreement. It's quite clear that the resolution of all these issues is not going to be accomplished by June. So we are operating under an agreement that's been going for 25 years. We seek to continue negotiations in good faith with the state, and we seek an extension of the operating agreement under the exact terms and conditions that it has been operating for that time. And so that leads then to the two items, the update and the call for action here. If other colleagues want to comment, we can let that go, be interested, and we could get to a motion at that point.
Okay. Supervisor Lenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Supervisor Gibson stated that we both sat on many, many meetings, and the one thing I want to hammer home that I haven't heard today that anyone mentioned, it's very, very important. County staff, Supervisor Gibson, myself, along with a variety of other people, state parks and beaches, legal folks from the state, financial people, we have worked very, very hard to answer the questions, comments, and concerns that have not only been brought up in our working groups, but have been brought up through emails, the public's phone call, people that see me on the street, things of that nature. So I don't want you to think that if we didn't answer your question specifically, or if you asked a question or sent us an email or a comment, that it fell on deaf ears. This is a very complex issue. This is not a simple math problem where we say we came up with the right answer. What our commitment has been to look at all the impacts, environmental, economic, and come up with the best possible plan. There really is no rush to judgment here. I'm very sensitive to the business community that want to get a deal closed or an ink signed contract or a bottom line. But we need to ensure that we've done the best with our collaboration and cooperation, and our state partners are in a negotiation with us. I wish we had the opportunity to be more open, but that's why they call it closed session. That's how counties do business. That's how cities do business when you're in contractual negotiations. It's difficult for the public to sometimes understand, but it's based entirely on trust. And my commitment to you is that we have worked very hard this last year, and we will continue to work hard to resolve this and create the best possible deal for all of us. And that is a monumental task, but we're up to it. So I want to assure the public that we haven't been goofing off, that even though it took a year, these things are very, very important to all of us. And I want to take a moment to thank the state that's been very receptive to fly down from Sacramento to some of our meetings and do different things, because without their support and without the ability of their people to come to the table, we wouldn't be in this negotiation phase. So it is literally a work in progress. And I want to emphasize that you're just going to have to trust us that we're working very hard on this. And if there's anything I can do to answer any specific questions without violating any rules as far as what goes on in closed session, I would be glad to do that.
Okay. Thank you, Supervisor Lenthal. And one comment I'd like to make, just to more or less wrap everything up. The issues that were presented today, as well as the ones that were presented in the previous hearing, we know those. And those are precisely the issues that are being negotiated by the negotiating team that Supervisor Gibson and Supervisor Lenthal, along with several members of our staff, are engaged in with the state. One of the things I wanted to give you a bit of an update on, there was significant testimony this afternoon on the particulate matter issue that was first raised by the Air Pollution Control District many months ago. And they are currently working with the state to set up a monitoring program that will occur over the course of the next year to really define the particulate matter issue relative to the dunes and the vehicular use on the dunes. And that study is currently, it's about to get underway. They've got the monitoring stations mostly set up and ready to go, and it'll be a very extensive study and should give us the information that we need as to the impact of the vehicular use on the dunes and the particulate matter in the air. So that's something that's been evolving since our first hearing a year ago, and we'll have that information within the next 9 to 12 months. So with that, I have a request from Supervisor Gibson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate you bringing up the matter, the particulate matter. You know, clearly the APCD has made it very clear that it has measured elevated levels of particulate matter over the mesa, and that the study that you reference is specifically aimed at studying what connection, if any, there is with recreational vehicle use on the dunes. At this point, the APCD is careful to point out they cannot make that specific connection at a level of any scientific certainty. With that, and I see more lights coming on, I was about to offer a motion, but
Go
ahead.
I would offer then staff's recommendation on the extension of the operating agreement.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to approve staff's recommendation. Is there discussion, Supervisor Linthal?
No, I just want to make a motion.
Good deal.
You beat me to it.
All right. We have a roll call vote. Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Offit?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye. Motion carries. I want to thank all of you for coming in today and participating in this hearing, and we'll move forward. Meeting is adjourned.